baseball.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Bat Flips and Infield Shifts, the worst baseball podcast on the market. My name is Greg Walker, coming to you from Kansas City, Missouri, and joining me over Zoom is my co-host, Brendan Stepik. Brendan, how the hell are you?
Hey, 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 I would classify today as a medium well day, Greg. Pretty good, beautiful weather, stuck inside at work. I can't do much about that, but yeah, I'm doing pretty damn good.
Are you saying you got cooked today a little bit more than usual?
Yeah, just about. Not as much as I like, but yeah, just a little bit.
Right, right.
More, I don't know.
If we're going on that scale, then I have to use like medium rare to describe like a really good day, because that's my opinion of steak anyway.
Yeah, I'm a medium guy.
Yeah, boo! No, I mean, medium's acceptable. No, that's okay. As long as once you get past medium on steaks, especially if it's a good steak, I'm like, you're just kind of ruining a good piece of meat there. Like, can you stop, please?
Yeah, basically. But hey, I know baseball pod, fucking football's back. I'm loving it. I'm great. Doing awesome.
I am not going to be watching the Niffle game tonight, despite the fact that my starting quarterback in fantasy football is starting tonight.
Yeah.
So we're going to see how that goes. I was flip-flopping, like, should I start Trevor Lawrence this weekend? Because, like, the Bills have a good defense. I don't know. I like Trevor Lawrence a lot, but I'll stick with my quarterback one for now. I really don't know what I'm doing in fantasy, so I'm just going to kind of wing it.
Neither do I. My quarterback duo, I dropped Tom Brady. I've picked up Justin Fields.
What league are you in that you can just drop Tom Brady?
I picked him
You're
in
like
the...
like a six-team league?
I picked him in the fifth round. I think there's eight of us.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm starting Mitchell Trubisky. He's my boy, and I'm going to be backing him up with Justin Fields. So, great.
That's an uninspiring.
Great. I'm here.
But Bears pod, I guess.
Bears pod. Mitchell Trubisky is a good top 20 quarterback in the NFL. I will die on that hill.
Okay, we will see about that, I guess. I'm not going to be holding my breath, but I'm also probably not going to watch any games the Chiefs don't play in, because that's just kind of what I do. But anyway.
Hey, Bears Steelers, they play this year. Or not Bears Steelers, Chiefs Steelers. So
huge. They played twice last year, and Chiefs killed them both times, and I was at one of those games. Anyway.
Didn't have Mitch, but sorry.
This is, in fact, a baseball podcast.
Hey! So
we're going to be talking about some baseball. Obviously, last week we did our whole division roundup, the whole playoff chase preview. But this week we're going to be getting back to our regularly scheduled coverage of whatever kind of stuff that we decide that we want to talk about. So we have a big drought that came to an end. We have an interesting kind of a stat race going, and some awards races that have opened up a little bit, as well as some heavy statistical analysis that we will save for the end. But before we get into that, Brendan, are you enjoying any beverages tonight?
Well, I am having a beverage, Greg. I've never seen this before in my life, but coming from Memphis, Tennessee, I have a Frio Light. I've never had this. I've never seen it. I don't know what it is. It is a 92-calorie American-owned and brewed light beer. No sugar. 4%.
Yes, I have never heard of that either. Where did you find that?
At my local beer station.
Okay, so that must just be like one of those kind of the regional light lagers that I guess sometimes just spread out, kind of like the Montuckies that I've been drinking a little bit this year. So
yeah, but I
just
see
like
those.
Probably just like a run-of-the-mill light beer.
Yeah, I see those a bunch, but yeah, let's give it a go.
Right, but hey, I never saw the Montuckies before like last year in the Midwest.
Greg, that is an exceptionally average light beer.
Yeah, that's not at all surprising.
That's all it is. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, Frio Light. I will put that on my list. So tonight, I have a little bit of a Miller Light left. I just polished
it. You always do.
Also, from New Belgium Brewing Company.
A fucking course.
So let me preface this by saying we're getting into autumn now, and autumn seasonal beers are the worst seasonal beers to me, like without a doubt. Because
you don't like pumpkin beers?
No, autumn seasonals are like pumpkin beers or Oktoberfests or like Ambers, which are not beers that I generally like. But this is a Voodoo Ranger product, so I had to give it a go. It is the Atomic Pumpkin, which here's the thing about the Atomic Pumpkin. According to the package, it's pumpkin, but also habanero and cinnamon. So this is kind of an adventure. I don't know what to expect. But
so it's a pumpkin spice Voodoo Ranger, which you're trying to tell me.
Okay, it's not as spicy as I expected. Oh, okay. At the end, it's a little bit spicy there, actually. I can pick that up now. It's definitely more cinnamon than pumpkin, so I can get down with that for that reason. I'd say that's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'll take it. As far as a fall seasonal beer goes, not too bad.
Now, if this wasn't a Voodoo Ranger, if you didn't have that Voodoo Ranger attached to it, what would you think of it?
I would not have purchased it.
I know you're not going to talk bad about any Voodoo Rangers. So if you take that away from it, I know you would have purchased it, but what does that have to do with your rating?
Well, it is actually better than I thought it would be, just because I don't really like pumpkin. But the fact for me that the pumpkin isn't coming through too strongly kind of bumps it up
Can't
for
have
me.
that,
It's
yeah.
more like cinnamon than pumpkin, with a little bit of spice at the end, which I think makes it's interesting. It's like, I have a high spice tolerance, so it's nowhere close to overwhelming, but it's just enough to be like, oh, there's a little bit of kick there at the end.
Yeah, nice. Nice, that's nice.
Let's go ahead and get into it, Brendan. Tonight, I want to start out with a story that we talked about earlier this year that I have been keeping kind of tabs on, and it has officially come to an end now. And that is my guy, second baseman and now utility player for the Washington Nationals, Cesar Hernandez. He has played left field lately a little bit, two, three games in left field. So he's officially not just a second baseman, he is a utility player. So Cesar Hernandez, just to reiterate, last year he had 21 home runs. This year he had hit zero entering play on September 4th. That's right, zero after a season of 21. I know that is some kind of record of longest homerless start to a season after hitting that many home runs. I saw it on Twitter somewhere, couldn't find the exact tweet again. It is some sort of record. But on Tuesday, he was facing the, or Monday rather, he was facing the New York Mets in Citi Field. He stepped up to the plate. He took two walks in his first two plate appearances, and then he stepped up for his third. And he got an inside fastball from Trevor Williams, yanked it out to right field and into the second deck in Citi Field for his first homer of the season, his 546th plate appearance of the season before getting his first home run. And as I mentioned, this was no cheap shot either. It went into the second deck. Brendan, you said it was only a matter of time. He'd had some hard luck this year. His batted ball metrics have been bad, but he should have gotten one by now. But it's good to see him finally break the seal.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, I mean, beautiful. Congratulations to him. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking now, because of course I didn't prepare, that he had been getting a lot of like what Statcast on Baseball's Online categorizes as quote doubters, which I assume there's a number, ball hit pretty hard, hit pretty far that just didn't get out.
It's
He had
based on the doubters are mostly gone. They're based on the number of ballparks it would have gone out of, based on like the distance and the wall height. So I think doubters is like fewer than 10 or something like that, and mostly gone is more than that, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at his expected home run numbers, I mean, none of them were at one. I mean, the only ones at one is like KC, Detroit, your bigger ballparks, but it gets up to like five, six. I mean, so he was due, like I had said. I mean, at this so far this season, he had one doubter, four mostly gone, seven doubters. Sorry, one no doubter, but so he was due. But man, what happened to that power? It's so strange.
That is bizarre. And actually, it was funny. He got his 21st homer last year on August 26th and didn't hit one after that for the rest of the season. And he was an everyday player for the rest of the season there. So that was over a month of last year and into this year. So he went over a full calendar year without hitting a home run in a regular season game, which is just remarkable because, yeah, he had 21 homers last year. It was a career high. So, like, maybe it was like a bit of an aberration, but still, like, you'd think he would have run into one by now.
You'd think. Where did he go to the White Sox at the trade deadline last year?
That's right. He finished out the season with the White Sox. That last home run, as I mentioned, on August 26th was at Toronto while he was playing for the White Sox.
Okay, where did he start the season at? Cleveland?
Cleveland.
Which I thought we talked about last year that he like went to a smaller, more hitter friendly ballpark and just like didn't hit very many at all. So more than a calendar year, but he's back. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has three home runs now, I think. So he's obviously he only has one. I'm sure he's got the lowest numbers. Anyone else who has played as much as him only have one?
There are two qualified hitters that have yet to homer, and that
Oh.
is Nicky Lopez for the Royals. He has 444 plate appearances without going yard, and the current leader, Miles Straw for Cleveland, has 501
Of
plate
course.
appearances without going yard. And I wouldn't be shocked if neither of them hit one this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Who do you think in their career hits a home run first? Nicky Lopez or, next, Nicky Lopez or Miles Straw?
I'm going to say Nicky Lopez because he has an 050 ISO while Miles Straw has an 049 ISO. I will actually have a piece about Nicky Lopez's home runs coming out on Royals Review pretty soon. So keep a lookout for that. It's a less statistical heavy and more of just a shits and giggles kind of piece than what I've usually written for them.
I love it. Yeah. Of course, I got to go my boy Miles Straw. So big Miles Straw guy.
Yeah, big Miles Straw. But congratulations to my guy, Cesar. It had been a long time coming. Glad to see you finally got one. He did get a thorough silent treatment from the Nationals dugout afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, at that point in time, the players all are in on it as well.
And speaking of low home run totals, the next highest after Cesar Hernandez are qualified are a four-way tie with three home runs. And those are Stephen Kwan, Jose Iglesias, the aforementioned Kiner Falefa, and Adam Frazier.
Yes, Adam Frazier, known power hitter. Pretty sure Tony Kemp's pretty close. I think he's only got four or five. I think he's got four.
Tony Kemp has four, so he is right there. And out of all the people that have hit four or fewer home runs, that's nine players, only one of them actually has an above average weighted runs created plus. And there's, of course, Stephen Kwan because he has a 364 on base percentage.
Right. So. Yeah. And he did just play in Kansas City, so I'm sure his raises a weighted runs created plus back to 50.
Yeah. And for the first like 2 or 3 months of the season, just that first series in Kansas City was completely carrying his offensive numbers. It was comical the way that he just annihilated Royals pitching.
Yeah, and he came back down to earth a little bit, but he's still having a pretty good season. 122 games, 289, 364, OPS plus 115, 51 walks, 50 strikeouts. You'll have to see that.
Yeah, he's just settled in as a guy with good play discipline and puts the bat in the ball. So it's a guy that'll play for sure, even if there's really no power there.
Yeah, he can play all the outfield positions as well. So, yeah. No, I mean, how is he defensively? I know decent, I think.
He's at least average.
Depending on the flavor of defensive metric you like.
Do you remember when Miles Straw said that he would steal like 1,000 bases in a season if he was playing every day? He's been playing every day and he's stolen 16 bases.
Well, that's a little bit lower than 1,000, but he is pretty speedy. He hasn't really been stealing a ton, has he? 16 stolen bases, only one caught stealing.
Which is
stealing.
Weird
so that's a good percentage.
Because that was Miles Straw's game. That was his biggest asset was his speed. I mean, he stole 30 last year across his split time between Houston and Cleveland.
Right.
And in the minors, he was putting up some very impressive stolen base totals. I mean, he stole 36 bases in 2017 in low A. In 2018, between double A and triple A, he stole 70 total bases. So, that was his thing in the minors. Didn't really carry over the big leagues, though.
Yeah, not necessarily. Ricky Henderson didn't even get to 1,000 stolen bases in the season, so I don't know if he is necessary. I mean, Ricky Henderson has 1,400 career stolen bases. So Miles Straw getting 1,000 in one season would be pretty significant.
That would get him up pretty close. That might be an untouchable record with Ricky Henderson because just people just don't run like they used to.
He would have to get on base almost like twice a game, at least.
Yeah, there's just very few players with like the skills and the guys will just go every time to actually get there because the volume is really helpful there. The only one I can think of off the top of my head is Adalberto Mondesi because he steals all the time, but he's always hurt. So that's the issue for him. It's just not playing enough games to have a chance.
And you mentioned that these guys who just go whenever, Ricky Henderson, all-time leader in stolen bases, also all-time leader in caught ceilings. That's a reason, right? So
he still stole with enough efficiency to make it worth it, though. So he is a guy that could just go every time.
Yeah, absolutely. So shouts to Cesar Hernandez. How many stolen bases does Cesar Hernandez have, Greg? Pile back together.
Yeah, Cesar Hernandez this year has 9 stolen bases.
Oh, sick.
It's an 80 weighted runs created plus that is better than Lopez and Estrada.
Yeah, there you go. So.
So let's stick in the National League East, Brendan, because I want to talk about a guy that I'm currently watching in his pitching performance right now. Mm-hmm. And that is Marlins starting pitcher Sandy Alcantara, because he was just so awesome in the first half. He'd been going deep into games consistently, throwing quality innings. He was the clear-cut Cy Young favorite for a lot of the year. But he's been struggling lately. In his last start against Atlanta, he gave up 6 runs in only 5 innings. 2 starts prior to that, at the Dodgers, he gave up 6 runs in just 3 2/3. And tonight against Philly, he's not exactly having an outstanding start either. It's in replay right now, so I can't give the current numbers. But It's more runs than you'd like to see him giving up. So that
Three
is part is
runs, 3 runs and 4 1/3.
that is right. Yeah. One out in the fifth inning, 3 runs allowed. So on his way to another not super awesome start. And this kind of rough stretch has inflated his ERA up to 2.36, has inflated his FIP up to 3.06. And Brendan, I'm not sure he's still the clear-cut front runner for the National League Cy Young Award anymore.
Maybe not clear cut, but I do think he'll win it. I think he'll still win it. I mean, I guess now we expand out to who else? Aaron Nola? Like, I like Sandy better than Aaron Nola at this point.
Aaron Nola is the leader in Fangraphs WAR by an eyelash over Carlos Rodon. So, worth noting, Carlos Rodon is a 2.33 FIP, which is best in the National League. So, that'll play. Obviously, Alcantara is going to have the innings advantage over all of them. And really, that's going to be the calling card because he doesn't even really have the ERA advantage by that much anymore. Because you know who else is right there? Max Fried.
Yeah.
2.48 ERA, 2.49 FIP, 163 and a third innings. He needs to be in this conversation too because he's right there with the rest of these guys.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's what? Four horse race. It's Alcantara, Nola, Carlos Rodon, and the person you Max Fried. Like, you
Yeah,
think it's gonna be
after
one of
that,
those four?
yeah, I think it is just because if you go down the Fangraphs WAR leaderboard after that, you get guys that all have a clear kind of WAR. I mean, Zach Wheeler, his innings are very
Yeah.
lacking, although he has been good. Merrill Kelly's having a strong season, but I just don't think his case collectively is going to compare to the rest of those guys. Corbin Burns is right there too, but not as good as last year. And so I do think it comes down to those four guys. And well, if you break it down, it's like none of them
Well,
to me are the clear-cut leader here because mentioned, like, yeah, Sandy Alcantara is the current leader in innings pitched. He probably will finish the season as that. And the current leader in ERA, but not by very much over Max Fried. And if you look at the peripherals, Nola and Rodon and even Fried have been considerably better.
yeah, and I think I should throw another. We'll talk about him later. Zach Gallen, also. Like, the fact that the Diamondbacks have two guys pitching as well here on the rotation is ridiculous, considering it's Arizona. But I think you could add throw Zach Gallen in that ring, too, for Cy Young. I mean, 2.42 ERA, 152 and two thirds innings pitched. I mean, whip under one, FIP at 3.08. Like, he's right there as well. So, the one thing about Sandy Alcantara is that for, I know he's been struggling, and you have to take that into account. He has been so dominant for so long, just going that full distance, 9 innings, so just being that workhorse. I think that's going to do, even if he does regress a little bit towards his FIP. I think his ERA before this game is at a 2.32, something like that, 2.23, something around that range. If he regresses, probably even to like a 2.4, 2.45. If he keeps going deep in the games, I don't know if, like, he's just been so dominant and such that workhorse for the Marlins. I think that will carry him.
Well, Zach Wheeler went deep into games last year too, and he didn't win the Cy Young. Like,
He's different. That's different.
yeah, it's different because of who his competition was. But it's just the case that, like, for so much of this year, we were just like, yeah, Alcantara is the National League Cy Young winner. Like, it wasn't even a question. And now it is much more of a question to me because his case just isn't as open and shut as it was throughout the year. And like, the ERA is
Yeah.
2.36 right now, and it's going to go up after this game.
Yeah. No, you're right. We need to stop just crowning Marlins pitchers, giving them awards in like June, because we did the same thing with Taylor Rogers,
Trevor.
Trevor Rogers last year with the Rookie of the Year, and guess how that worked? It
Yeah,
didn't.
we were
So,
so certain. I gotta
but
stop
I mean,
having
it
such
looked
high
certain
hopes for the
too.
Marlins early in general. Remember, I picked up for the postseason?
Yeah, remember I told you that wasn't going to
Remember the start
happen?
that Pablo Lopez got off to?
Yeah, I know. How he's not traded by now, I don't know, but
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's becoming more of a race. I just have the faith in Sandy Alcantara. I mean, he's at 190 innings. I know that innings counts isn't the sole benefactor to whether or not you're going to win the Cy Young or not, but just how he does it, he's been so dominant. And I get that's different now because he's given a lot of runs. He's been struggling, but just, he's going so deep into the games. He's been so consistent. I think that's going to do him a lot of good. I think if it does, he doesn't win it, I think it'll probably be Max Fried. I don't feel confident about that. Max Fried would be my pick, or I'd have to throw one out there, Zach Allen.
Yeah, if you're going for the cocktail of all the stats, then right now I think Fried or Alcantara is probably the pick. But I gotta point out, Nola has 177 and a third innings also, so he's not really far behind Alcantara in terms of the innings. And based on peripherals and if you like expected stats, then he's been better than Alcantara by most of those. Now, the ERA has been inflated because for some reason, just throughout his career, his ERA hasn't caught up to his FIP for some reason. So I'm just wondering, like, is Aaron Nola going to finish his career with his ERA just way higher than his FIP? Like, are the Phillies just going to do that to him like that?
We've had this conversation before. And Aaron Nola, I think I just have to accept that that's just what he's going to be.
I don't understand, though. He strikes dudes out. He doesn't walk anybody. And the batted ball numbers are really good. So I just don't get it.
I don't. Okay, I've told you this on podcast before that he just – I'm waiting for him to flip into an extra gear. That's just another two runs that Philly scored off Alcantara.
So, okay, his ERA is going up even more now.
Yeah, and it was a
– and the bases are running on third still.
Yeah, the bases were loaded. It was a diving play in center that he missed. So, I think that's J.J. Blade. Yeah, so anyway, he just – I feel like he has another gear and he just hasn't reached it yet. And I have to.
I don't know what he can do differently, though.
I know, but it's just, I'm just waiting for him to finally be that Cy Young candidate, be that dude. And maybe this is the year he does that, you know, 27 starts, 177 innings. Like I said, Alcantara, in the same amount of starts, has like two extra starts worth of innings on him. Again, innings isn't the make or break deal for him, but I'm just waiting for him. And maybe this is his year, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how much Cy Young voters really care about WAR, which understandable because I don't really use it as much in Cy Young voting as I do when I look at MVPs. But
yeah.
If you do, then your front runners right now should be Nola and Rodon, because we haven't really mentioned exactly like with these other guys how good Rodon has been. I mean, 233 FIP, 292 ERA. Like, man, the White Sox could really use a guy like that right now, couldn't they?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Rodon's opting out of his deal, right? There's no chance he's staying.
He's got to. Yeah. I mean, he's now putting together that full, healthy, dominant season that he's always been capable of. So the dude's going to go get paid. Like, you obviously still have to have the injury concerns just because of the history, but this is two straight years now where he's been just unbelievably dominant.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So, I could see him sneak in there, but 157 innings. I don't know. The strikeouts are there. Is he going to be another like Zach Wheeler where like the strikeouts are there, but he doesn't quite get there because of some other guy, which is so that much more dominant. I don't know, but he's for sure in there. Yes, it's a race. I still would put my money on Alcantara.
I just, after tonight, I don't know, like if Alcantara went out and just did like, you know, six innings and two runs or something, then I'd probably still be right there. But he's already at five runs allowed, hasn't even finished the fifth inning. He's already at 80 pitches, so I don't think he's going to go really deep into this one.
Probably not, no. Just like four complete games in a shutout is crazy to me. So, I don't know. I know the Marlins' offense doesn't give him that much help. But, yeah, I could see that if after tonight, what's his next start, if he struggles, like let's kind of project out who he starts. He's got, what, five left, roughly?
Yeah, he probably got five after this, get up to 33 starts in the year.
Yeah. So if you look at, obviously, he's playing today, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It'd be the Texas Rangers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At the Nationals, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Against the Nationals again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. At Milwaukee, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then Atlanta.
That's a pretty favorable schedule up until that last start against Atlanta, I got to say.
Do you think that the innings is getting to him? 190 innings pitched. I don't know if he's gotten to that point.
He cleared 200 last
year
also, I'm pretty sure.
Sure, but before then it was 42 in 2020, 197 in 2019, then, you know, 2017.
No, I don't think so. 205 and two-thirds innings last year, so I don't think he's wearing down.
In 33 starts, so he's going to eclipse that probably in the next, you know, couple of them, but –
He's a legit workhorse, but we are just going to get two straight years here in the National League where we can kind of get some sort of gauge for how Cy Young voters weigh the workload versus the base stats. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see, and then it's going to kind of inform us for just how we look at pitchers going forward. Because I mentioned this previously, do we need to change how we look at pitchers because there's nobody's throwing as many innings anymore? I don't know. We don't need to relitigate that one.
How would you evaluate, like, when you look at your Cy Young candidates, I think, like, what do you look at? What do you value?
I mean, you know, I'm a FIP guy, so
I know
I care a lot about the FIP. Basically, the main three things that I look at is, like, first the FIP and then the innings, and then I'll look at the ERA and kind of compare the ERA and the FIP and be like, okay, was there some BABIP luck going on? Was he getting unlucky or lucky in some sense or another? What's the home run fly ball rate like? Is it really wonky? So Like, I do care about the ERA. Like, I do care about ultimately how many runs scored when this guy was on the mound. But I also care, like, okay, was how much luck was there involved? Like, was he bailed out by a good defense, or was he snake bitten by a bad defense? So I care about those kinds of things because I do like to think that FIP still does a very good job of isolating just
Sure.
how much a pitcher really did without kind of like stripping away the outside factors out of the control as much as possible. So I look at kind of those stats the most and then just try to make a judgment call because, I mean, Cy Young voting is hard. Like, I feel like I have a better handle on
Right.
MVP voting.
Yeah. See, I, of course, I feel like I have a better gauge for Cy Young voting, but you're right. You basically do what I do. I look at FIP, I look at ERA, I look at innings pitched, and I look at strikeouts, and I look at strikeout to walks, and basically, like, how it's the dominant factor for me. Like, how dominant were you? Did you pitch a lot of innings? Did you strike a lot of guys out? Did you not walk guys? Did you do your job? Did you deepen the games? If you are available to, like, evaluating a Cy Young Award winner for the Rays is different for than, you know, any other teams because it's just different situations, different management styles. So I take that into account as well. But it's mostly for me just the dominance factor. Cy Young Contra, 107 innings, 47 walks, or sorry, 170 strikeouts, 47 walks. Like that stuff means something to me. So it's more the dominance factor to me. Are you mowing down hitters? Are you striking guys out? Are you keeping guys off the base pass? Are you going deep in the games?
So let's go ahead and mention here now a pitcher that we just mentioned a little bit earlier that's kind of inserted himself into the race. And that is Diamondbacks ace Zach Gallen, who is on some kind of roll right now. He has racked up 41 and a third consecutive scoreless innings over six starts. And that is a remarkable streak. We're getting into historic territory here. So he's only 2 outs away from matching Brandon Webb's 2007 franchise record for the Diamondbacks. And if he goes in there 3 2/3 scoreless, he'll get into the top 10 of longest scoreless streaks in major league history, tying names like Cy Young, know that one, and Sal Magley and Doc White, who are lesser known names, but old-timey guys that went on long scoreless streaks anyway. The dude has been on just another level right now. Like, he's shown a lot of flashes in the past. Like, his 2019 and 2020 seasons were very solid. Last year was a bit of a disappointment. This year got up to a bit of a rocky start, but he has shown what he can do at his peak in these last few starts.
Yeah, absolutely. Is Bob Gibson at all on that list?
I don't know. I don't have the full list in front of me, and I
Right.
don't know exactly where to find it. So.
I feel like that'd be a Bob Gibson kind of list to be on, especially that one his famous year. But yeah, Zach Gallen, I mean, he's always, like you said, he's always shown the ability to pitch, the command, the stuff to be able to do so. And he looks like he's finally getting it all put together. He showed flashes, like you said, in 2019, and then now that he's fully healthy back in 2022, he's looked really good. The Baseball Savant page is, I don't want to say uninspiring, but if we're as dominant as he's been the entire season, you'd think like some of his rate stats would be better, or some of his Savant percentiles would be better. Like he kind of gets barreled up a little bit. He doesn't miss a lot of bats, but he gets a lot of chases. Like everything's around like the middle to like 50th to 75th percentile, and I think it you'd want more, or I guess you'd expect more, but he's looked really, really good.
Yeah, so in those past six starts, he has gone at least six innings in all of them. In fact, he's gone at least seven innings in five of them. The only exception was six shutout against Kansas City with six strikeouts. And he's been really doing it all. Like, he has very much limited the walks over those starts, only seven total or eight total walks, rather, in that stretch. Racking up the strikeouts, no home runs because obviously he hasn't given up a run. In all
Sure.
of those starts, he's given up four hits or fewer. And in fact, he's only given up even four hits once. It's been three hits or fewer in the rest of them. So, is there some BABIP luck at play here? Absolutely. But
Oh, sure.
you don't go 41 and a third consecutive scoreless by accident. I mean, that requires
Right.
some incredible pitching and also some good defense behind you. Now, the all-time record was Oral Hershiser with 59 consecutive scoreless innings. He could maybe do it. Like, there's enough season left to do it. That said,
Yeah.
that would require him in that span. If he's going to do it, he will have starts probably against the Padres and the Dodgers.
Yeah, so he'd have to work for it, but and I don't think he'll get there. I think you're right. I shouldn't say a lot of it. A big part of it is BABIP luck. And yeah, that's gonna happen to you if you go on a run like this. But he's been pitching very well. Only 27. I mean, I don't want to say that like, he's looked really good. I looked at this again, I'm looking at his Statcast page. Nothing really jumps out at me of what maybe could have changed from even beginning of the season to now or in previous years.
According to Zips projections. I'm reading on this Fangraphs article. Based on the run environment, Zips thinks there's a 23% chance of a team scoring at least one run against him in any given inning. And so he needs 18 more innings to reach, or rather exceed, Oral Hershiser's streak. And so, look, there's a chance. Like, obviously, it's an outside shot because 59 consecutive scoreless innings is just like ridiculous. Like, that doesn't even sound real.
Sure.
It sounds like a video game number. And the fact
Right.
he's going to have to match up against the Dodgers and the Padres, but he's done it against some decent offenses. Like, he did it seven scoreless in Colorado, which that's a tough offensive environment right there. He did
Sure.
seven scoreless against Philly, and they got a good offense out there. So,
He got 5 runs off our Cy Young favorite, right?
yeah.
So,
And he's thrown six scoreless innings against the Dodgers earlier this year.
yeah, and you got to think what you said 23 and a third more innings pitched. That's if he goes sixth inning like he
18.
has been 18. So, I mean, that's at least 3 more starts probably. So, I don't know. It's a cool story, but it's more so about, again, I think we can kind of expand this from Gallen to the Arizona Diamondbacks, maybe as a team as a whole, but especially their 1-2 punch of him and Merrill Kelly, they are way exceeding expectations.
I mean, I've been pretty high on Gallen. Like, I thought
I have
last year
too.
was a bit of a blip. I know he was hurt for some time, so I thought he would still be good. Merrill Kelly's been a surprise for me. I mean, I did
Sure.
not expect this out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just, yeah, Merrill Kelly, 2.94 ERA, the FIP at 3.27, Zach Gallen, 2.42, 3.08. And then I mean, Zach Davies has been pitching well, believe it or not, 3.74 ERA. And then Madison Bumgarner's just been that. But I mean, just this team as a whole, I mean, you don't hear about them at all because they're in all West, but they're 75, 65 and 71, fourth in the NL West. Like they're getting close to being 500. This is where I thought they'd be last season before they just completely fell off. I thought they'd be somewhere in the middle between here and what they were last season, but this is surprising.
Hey,
There's just not much on
tied
this
for
team.
third. Give them some credit.
Oh, okay. I'm very sorry. Tied for third.
Over the past 30 days, Zach Gallen has an ex-WOBA against of 235, which is very easily the best among any pitcher who's thrown 500 pitches in that span. So it's not all luck. Like, he has not been hit hard at
Sure.
all.
Absolutely no. He's pitched well. So, yeah. I don't know how that's going to factor in into the Cy Young. Like if he keeps rolling, maybe not scoreless innings, but if he keeps rolling, I think he could be in that conversation if he's not already. But I don't know where they'll put him. But it's going to be a fun race. Kind of like going back to the past conversation. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, he has inserted himself into the conversation. Like, he's definitely
Absolutely.
going to get votes at the very least, which 2 months ago, I don't know if I would have been saying that. And hell, if he, by the off chance, if he does actually match or exceed Oral Hershiser's scoreless streak, then he might just win the damn thing just based on that. Like, if he pitches that well for another at least 18 innings, then his season-long numbers are probably going to be right there with the rest of them. And he's going to have that historic record to go along with it. Kind of like a situation like Joe DiMaggio with the 56 game hit streak, won MVP over Ted Williams, who arguably had better numbers. So I know that's a stretch of a comparison, but still.
Right. So if he breaks that record, if he just get how many innings pitches needed?
18.
18. So if he sticks at 41 runs, he gets 18 more consecutive outs. His ERA, that's not correct at all. Hang on, sorry. I didn't not 18 total innings, but that's 170 and two thirds innings. He'd be at with only 41 runs. His season ERA would be at 2.17. He is for sure the Cy Young winner at that point. The season then after that, like absolutely.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't like break the record and then get blown up in his next few starts, then yeah, he'd be right there.
Sure, but again, let's just go 18 more scoreless innings. That gets him to a 2.17. I think even if he gets like a 2.25, he'd be like top three probably. He could.
I know I want this to happen. Like, I love seeing historical shit like this happen because it's so rare and it's just an absolute pleasure to watch, especially for a team like Arizona that hasn't provided a whole lot of other reason to really pay attention this year. So, like, just a sneaky backdoor Cy Young award for Zach Gallen. Like, I'd love that.
Out of nowhere, absolutely, Sandy. Yeah. So especially after, and not it's not just us, but a lot of people had Sandy Alcantara as the Cy Young Award winner for a long time. So it'd be cool to see him just snatch that out of nowhere, seemingly. But yeah, no, I mean. They have a pretty good 1-2 punch with Merrill Kelly and Zach Allen here in Arizona. I don't know how they are. Obviously, Corbin Carroll's up. I don't know what other prospects they have close. Alec Thomas, I think, is struggling in the major leagues and splitting time between the minors. But like, is Arizona on the up? Like, is this someone you two guys you build around, or like just quickly?
I mean, with the high-rated prospects they got coming up, then yeah. I mean, you forgot to mention Dalton Varsho, who
It's
is
also
a
true.
legit stud. Dalton Varsho is so good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's a lot of
And
fun to watch.
all-world defensive first baseman Christian Walker, too.
Yeah. I don't know if you necessarily want to build around Christian Walker because isn't he like 32?
31. What, whatever.
31. Yeah, it's fine.
Let's move on to a quick off-the-field topic here. Brendan, unionize the minors. It is happening.
It's here, Craig. This happened. We've talked about this a couple of times on the podcast throughout the life of this podcast in the past couple of years. We haven't really gotten to the point of the Tipping Pitches podcast level of advocating for a union for the minor leagues, but
I think
we've
we
been
are a
vocal
less
about it.
knowledgeable podcast in terms of labor than they are.
Also that, but you get my point. We have been there from the jump, but finally it's happened. Last Monday, the Major League Baseball Players Association announced that they are, quote, beginning a campaign to unionize minor league players across the country, end quote, with the help of advocates for minor leaguers, which that association was formed in 2020 due to the COVID pandemic and how minor leaguers are treated during that, which they have been absorbed basically by the MLBPA in their per their statement. They have announced this Tuesday, actually 2 days ago, that they have received a majority, more than 50%. You only need 30% of union cards, I believe, but they've a vast majority of players have signed their union cards, and they have formally requested Major League Baseball to recognize the union for the minor league. So this is huge.
Yeah, it's been needed for
Long
a
time
very long
coming.
time. So thank God it's finally happening. I don't know about you, but I was surprised. Like, it seemed to come out of nowhere for me.
That's what exactly what I thought, like out of nowhere in the middle of a season too. But I guess taking a look back at it, you could tell that it was trending this way for a long time. Like I said, I think the COVID pandemic really got it going a lot more because of the whole minor league system and then Major League Baseball cutting rosters and then obviously the CBA talk this offseason. I think it had all been building at this point, but right, just it did come out of nowhere. And I was very surprised. I'm happily surprised, but I'm very surprised.
Yeah, I'm very surprised this happened, and it makes sense now with minor league contraction having happened rather, because previously minor league teams and players were all independent contractors. But now they're all part of that major league umbrella, so it's going to be a lot easier to kind of unionize them from that standpoint. One slight concern I had was going to be, well, if they're also in the MLBPA, then won't there be kind of conflicts of interest between the major and the minor leaguers? But my understanding is that there's going to be separate bargaining units for the major league players and for the minor league players. So that is reassuring if that's going to happen. I mean, it's logistically a lot easier, and obviously the
Sure.
interests of each party isn't necessarily the same. So that'll be very good if it does shake out like that. I'm surprised by the complete radio silence that we've gotten from the MLB end of this, because I figured the moment this announcement came out, there was going to be some MLB propaganda coming out from like John Heyman or Bob Nightingale or somebody about how this is like bad and how they shouldn't unionize, but it's been nothing from the Major League Baseball end.
I mean, I know you put out propaganda help is bad, like really, honestly, like what could they say? Like,
Come out
especially
with,
now that
I
more
mean,
than half have signed their cards, like there's not much else they can do.
they'll do what every other private company like Amazon and Starbucks and such does when a union tries to form, which is put out propaganda to try to dissuade it from happening, like try to convince the employees, no, you're better off without a union. But the fact that it already seems like they're drumming up majority support among their workforce is very encouraging. And now it's going to be the question of, you mentioned they have asked Major League Baseball to recognize the union. And so it's to be like, okay, will MLB just go ahead and do it because there might be some advantages to them just recognizing a union voluntarily? Or are they going to go up to the National Labor Relations Board and have them sort it out? And so that'll be interesting to find out. But there's potential advantages, I think, for MLB to just come out and just recognize them, just not take it up to a fight, especially because if there already is a majority of major or minor league players that are in support of it, then it's going to be awfully hard for MLB to win that.
And again, so that's kind of my point. There's not much real that Major League Baseball can do now. I think we can both agree if they could draw this out and make it painful for both sides, that's what Major League Baseball is going to do, right? Because that's historically what they've done for, labor relations under Rob Manfred. But I just don't know if there's nothing they can do. It's all up to the players in the minor leagues, but I just don't know what much else other option that they have other than trying to fight it a little bit. But they have the support, the minor leaguers do. So there's not much that I'm obviously not a labor expert, but it just seems like there's only one way this is going to end, and that's with a minor league union.
Which, thank God, man. Thank God. Now we've seen like some things that MLB has done, which I think at least in part were to try to convince the minor leaguers not to union, such as giving them the minimum pay increases that happened recently, providing housing and all that. It's like when Apple offered retail workers 10% raises after some of their stores unionized this past summer. It's just a similar tactic of, oh, hey, look at these things we'll do for you. You don't need to unionize. But I'm glad to see this drumming a majority of support among the minor leaguers because, I mean, good Lord, they need it, man. They need it.
And like it was never not going to. It was just they just needed that push. And I think the biggest takeaway for me is that it's the Major League Baseball Players Association taking the lead on this. The minor leaguers, because we talked about this, the possible repercussions if the minor leaguers try to do it on their own. They don't have that. They have the umbrella, the resources, the lawyers, the expertise that the major league players have helping them along with this unit. I think that is huge. I think that's probably the only way this works is if Major League Players Association helped them out and took the lead on this.
Yeah, there is a bit less momentum than like the MLBPA would have had in, for example, the collective bargaining agreement negotiations this past offseason
Sure.
because there wasn't already an existing CBA, so kind of no momentum coming in for that. But it's going to be different, and I assume like yeah, MLB is going to like make this as protracted of a process as possible.
Course.
Like they are going to drag their feet and stretch this out as much as they can, but.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen, man. It's about time it's gonna happen.
No, it's long overdue. It'll be interesting to see how everything is going to shape up with this as well. Because, like I said before, they didn't have a union. They're contractors. They can do what they want. The owners and the teams can do what they want. They can't really do that anymore. So, the whole system is going to completely change and for the better. We talked about this. It's long overdue.
Yeah, I'm always thrilled to see big victories for labor like this, like we've seen with Amazon recently, like we've seen with Starbucks. And the fact that it's happening in a space that we've been advocating it for basically since this podcast started, oh man, it's so pleasing. It's so
Good.
pleasing.
It's
I love to see
satisfying.
it. It's probably like it's one of the things of this baseball season that's made me the most happy, like when I saw the notification for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like I think it was like 10 o'clock on a Monday. What the fuck is going on? But yeah, I do wonder with it being the MLB Players Association, how long this has been in the works. If it's been since the CBA was signed, if it got started there, I wonder how long this has been in the works.
I have to imagine they've been plotting it for some time now.
Right. Again, weird time to do it in September, but not that timing matters, but yeah, no, I do wonder when all of the conversation started with this.
I mean, the best time for it would just be like as soon as possible. So if that was just the moment, like, okay, we're ready to just come out and start doing this, then yeah, that was the moment. So do it.
Yeah,
Don't drag your feet on it. No need to delay.
So, but I'm glad you pointed out that we haven't heard anything from Major League Baseball on this, and that is surprising. I don't know why, but I do feel like it's just no matter what they say, it's either only going to make the situation worse, or there's just not much they can do.
Yeah, and they've already just made things worse for themselves constantly from a PR standpoint. I mean, like Rob Manfred having press conferences every week during the pandemic and the process of trying to get the season restarted. Like, that wasn't doing them any favors PR-wise. I still figured they would try to put out some kind of propaganda to make themselves look like the good guys here, but it's been nothing.
Yeah, no, and I think to me, you can just talk it up, like there's not much they can do. There's really not anything they can do.
Yeah, there's not really much they can say that's going to make people turn to their side that aren't already on their side for whatever reason. And that, like, this particular fight just shows, unlike a lot of people in the labor fight last offseason, like to be like, oh, this is just millionaires fighting billionaires. It's like,
Not.
well, no, you can't even use that already false argument in this case because this is people making less than minimum wage against billionaires.
Yes.
So if you're going to side with the billionaires, then I have to just wonder, like, are you a soulless? Are you a landlord? Then that's the same thing, I guess, but.
I think that a lot of people, when you talk about professional sports and the players who play those professional sports, there's just not an understanding necessarily of the money. You see all of the big contracts with, major league free agents, Freddie Freeman and, Tatis, all this big money. You just don't understand how little minor leaguers get paid until you even get to double A and triple A. Even then, it's not a lot. Like low A guys, like it's a part-time job for a lot of minor league baseball players, especially in low levels. Like you have to live off of your signing bonus if you get, drafted, and that's how you come up. Like you have to live off that for a long time unless you're just really, really good and rise up the ranks. A lot of people don't understand that. These guys have fucking second jobs and third jobs. So, I mean, it's not millionaires fighting millionaires. It's people getting paid less than minimum wage to perform a specialized labor. Yes, it is playing a sport for a living, but that doesn't make you any less deserving of livable wages than everybody else.
And it is a full-time job. It's not like they just roll up to the ballpark and play a
You get
game
my
and leave. I
yes.
mean, they train all year round for this. Like, there's no off season. I call it an off season because they're not playing games. There's no off season. They're training the entire time. And
Yep.
as you mentioned, living off their signing bonus, if they even got one, which
And
a lot of guys
exactly.
didn't.
Exactly. And unfortunately, I don't remember the player's name, but I do remember, I think a couple months ago, maybe even a month ago, this player, I believe he was in the Brewers organization. Don't quote me on that. I don't want to, as I'm wearing a Brewers hat, I don't want to shit on the Brewers, but he had to get Tommy John. I think he was in the minor leagues, a double A or triple A, probably double A. And he had to get Tommy John, and they cut him, DFA'd him, cut him. And so he now has to pay for his Tommy John surgery by himself. He doesn't have that medical insurance from the organization or anything like that. Like, it's not just about pay that this union will protect. It's stuff like that. The exploitation of these guys who, now you're hurt, we don't want you anymore, now you're on your own. Tommy John isn't cheap. It's a surgery. It's a very invasive reconstructive surgery. And just the ability for Major League Baseball franchises who probably don't have a lot of connections with these players to be able to cut them if you're hurt, that's what this is also going to protect. And that's huge for a lot of guys.
Yes, and shout outs to the American healthcare system for requiring that kind of thing. And
Not a healthcare pod.
on a real note, shouts out to advocates for minor leaguers because they've been campaigning for this for a long time. They've done a
Yes.
lot of great work there. And now with this happening, they are being brought into the fold in the minor league base or in the Major League Baseball Players Associations. They're going to be
Yeah.
working directly with them and for them now. So they did a lot of great work over the years, and it's good to see their efforts pay off in a meaningful way. And they get to keep kind of doing all of this work now behind the official organization, too. So shouts to everybody over at Advocates for Minor Leaguers for that.
Yeah, and this is obviously still an unfolding process, but it's a big process, and it's big news. It's really big news, and like I said, it's long overdue. So,
Yes, if you would like more nuanced and informed information on these topics, I'd recommend the Tipping Pitches Baseball Podcast. They are the best labor baseball podcast that you will find.
yeah, not us. Don't take labor advice from
Yeah,
us. It's not.
we do our best, but we're not as informed on this kind of thing as they are.
No, I'm a data analyst. I don't do labor. Loss. Sorry.
Anyway, let's move on now. Let's talk about your under the radar pitcher of the week that, according to the notes, is quote, not Kyle Wright.
It's not Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright got lit up by the Oakland Athletics. And if that
Oh
happens to
no.
you are not the end of the radar pitcher. Like, no fucking chance. I think he gave up 6 runs in 4 innings against the Oakland Athletics, the 2002 Oakland A's. They played Atlanta really well in that series and lost both games, unfortunately. But no, my under the radar pitcher of the week. I don't remember if this is the second in a row, but he does hail from the great state of Texas, Greg. The under the radar pitcher of the week is a 33-year-old lefty who was drafted by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in the 8th round of the 2007 MLB draft. A former starter and all-star signed a minor league deal with the Texas Rangers in the offseason and has turned and in turn pitched 50 games to a sub-3 FIP. Matt Moore, Detroit Tigers legend,
Huge.
is your under the radar pitcher of the week. 4-2, 2.19 ERA, 2.98 FIP, 61 2/3 innings pitched, 68 strikeouts to 33 walks. This is his second stint actually with the Texas Rangers, and it's gotten a lot better than his first. He's pitching exclusively out of the bullpen. All 50 of those games have been out of the bullpen. mostly in the range of 1 to 2 innings pitch, but he has gotten multiple innings. His baseball savant page is very red, except for walk rate, which is very blue. He still walks his guys. The walk rate is at a 12.8%, which is the highest it's ever been. And that is a 9.8% career average. So he's always walked a lot of guys. He's just walking them a lot more, I guess. He's not getting the opportunity to settle in, I suppose. But he's using his overhand curve a lot more. Fastball curve guy, still mixing his changeup. So, but he's been really effective for the Texas Rangers. I know I talked about Brock Burke. I don't know if it was last time or the time before that, but I mean, they've got some guys here, the Rangers do in their bullpen. Younger guys, older guys, experienced guys, nice experienced guys. But Matt Moore turned from his starter to the bullpen. He's been very effective.
You've really gone pretty reliever heavy kind of down the stretch here. That's fascinating to me. But regardless, what a career arc for Matt Moore. I mean, he has been all over the map. I have right in front of me here from preseason 2012, the MLB Pipeline top 100 prospects list. Number 3 is Mike Trout. Number 2 is Bryce Harper. Number 1 is Matt Moore.
Yeah, he was a
pitcher
dude
for the Rays at the time. He was a legit prospect, dominated the minors, had a cup of coffee really in 2011, and then a really promising rookie campaign in 2012 as a starter, pretty solid in 2013 too. And then Tommy John in 2014 and just struggled with consistency after that. Wasn't really good as a starter for 2015 through 2018. Bounced around quite a bit, but he has really found a role for himself in this Rangers bullpen this year. I mean, he's put up a one more season for the first time since 2017, and that's as a reliever, by the way. He has been just very effective. Like, yeah, he walks a few guys, but aside from that, he's doing just about everything he could ask him to do. So the career arc has been fascinating, but to see a guy that was a top prospect and then a journeyman finally establish himself with a solid big league role somewhere, we love to see that. Shouts out Matt Moore. I was so high on him in 2014.
Sure, yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, he had the pedigree. He had the stuff. He was an all-star in 2013. He got Cy Young votes in 2013, that one year that he went 17-4, pitched to a 27 games starts, only 150 innings. Shout out to our previous.
Did he get Cy Young votes because he went 17-4?
Probably. I mean, the three. He finished ninth, so he was down ballot votes, but like still. But in his time from 2015 through 2021, with stints with the Rays, the Texas Rangers, the Phillies, the Giants, the Detroit Tigers, he had an ERA of a 5.26 in 142 games, 103 of those starts. And typically, when you see a guy go from the rotation to the bullpen, you see a spike in velocity. You really haven't seen that big of a spike in velocity from Matt Moore, but it's just that he's really he's using his stuff a lot more effectively. Like I said, he's using his curveball a lot more, his fastball a lot less. He's been really effective in 1, 2, you know, 3-inning stints sometimes. But just like you said, the career arc that he's had, just the ability to shift from that starter mentality to the bullpen, it's worked out so well for him. They got him on a minor league deal, Greg. You love to see it.
Yeah, the old adage is that everybody in the bullpen is a failed starter. It's really just a question of at what point they failed as a starter. And, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. Some guys fail as a starter and they go to the bullpen and they fail there too. But Matt Moore was not that guy. He's gone to the bullpen and found a lot of success there. It's really good to see. And I know he is on a minor league deal, so probably a one-year deal. So he's still going to be on Texas next year. Who knows? But either way, I hope he can just continue carving out a role as a really solid reliever. I mean, he can help just about any team there.
Yeah, I mean, he had been using his fastball about anywhere from 50 to 55% as a starter in his career. His fastball usage has dropped down to 43%. In turn, his curveball percentage usage rate has been around 20 to 23%. It's now jumped up to 40%. So he's utilizing that curveball, which he is in the 84th percentile in fastball spin, 43rd percentile in curveball spin. So it's not a high spin rate, but it's just really effective. And I think that's been one thing that's really been able to help him.
Yeah, it helps when the bullpen, when he can come on and just be like a breaking ball heavy reliever. Because especially if like that breaking ball is your bread and butter pitch, but you kind of struggle to find a good third pitch or you struggle with your fastball command, and that'll play a lot better in the bullpen than it will starting.
Yeah, I mean, he can throw it for strikes and get down in the dirt. I'm like, I've seen him pitch against Oakland. He's been really effective against Oakland. But you look at his rate stats since 2015, or his percentile rankings, rather. on Baseball Savant. I mean, barrel rate. He's always had a problem catching barrels. He's in the 90th percentile this season, right? The expected stats have always been 2016. He was okay, but poor. He's in the 94th, 96th, 92nd percentile in batting average, slugging, and expected isolated slugging. Hard hit rate is up to an 87th percentile. Strikeout rate's up. Walk rates have been bad, but whiff rate's up. Like he's get. I think the move to being almost the majority curveballs have helped him a lot in his special move from start of the bullpen. Like he's been able to get a lot of work off of that, and I think that's really key for him.
Yeah, huge. Shouts out to Matt Moore. Glad to see him find some sort of major league success somewhere, even if it
Yeah.
wasn't end up going to be in the rotation.
Dude, I
So
thought he was washed. I really did.
I think everybody did. I mean, when you
Yeah.
sign a guy on a minor league deal, that's kind of the expectation.
Yeah. But I mean, like back in like 2017, I thought he was washed. And here he is 2022 on this podcast.
Oh yeah. Shouts out Drew Smyly, another former lefty for the Rays. Anyway, let's move on. This has been a somewhat National League East heavy pod, so let's keep it going. Max Scherzer has now landed on the IL, and the Mets have not been playing well lately.
The Mets have a half game lead as of this morning against over the Atlanta Braves. It was tied at a couple points earlier in the week. But yeah, they've been struggling a lot. They set some record for losing to teams like under 30 games under 500, something like that. Of course, I didn't have that written down, but they have not been playing well. Good baseball in September, only 4-3 so far in the Braves have not let up. They have been playing really good ball.
Yeah, and it didn't really help too much either. The last time his team played, Atlanta took 3 out of 4 from the Mets in Atlanta. So, not doing themselves any favor, and they dropped a series to the Nationals. So, you can't be doing that if you're
They
going to be a
were
playoff team.
a Jacob deGrom start away from dropping back-to-back series to the Nationals and the Pirates, both bottom feeders in the league. Well, no, is Pittsburgh last in their league? In their division? Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah,
So,
not good.
not good at all. But yeah, like I said, they were Jacob deGrom, 7 shutout innings away from losing back-to-back series. And it's like, I mean, the pitching staff hasn't been pitching well, but the offense really just hasn't been there.
Yeah, they've not been scoring runs. I mean, they blew up with 15 runs in their doubleheader today against the Pirates, but prior to that, they've been putting up a lot of very uninspiring offensive performances. There's a lot of inconsistency there. A few 7-run games, but a lot of 2-run, 3-run kind of games, getting shut out by the Rockies and Herman Marquez. I mean, that's not super good. And now your second best starting pitcher is going on the IL at a very inopportune time because, as you mentioned, the Braves are right on their heels.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, they've been playing well, playing really well. Now, the A's gave them a pretty damn good push in their two games in Oakland, but they were able to come out winning both of those games. So, and we mentioned how the Mets had such a favorable schedule, and they almost dropped back-to-back series to two favorable opponents. So it's really key to see like can the Mets take advantage of their lighter schedule. And for the Braves, yes, they've been playing very, very well. I don't have their numbers in front of me right now. I'm working on that, Greg. Don't give me that look. They've been playing really well.
I love seeing that on the FanGraphs schedule for teams. It gives a projection for winning the game next to every game on the schedule. And
Sure.
usually it's somewhere between like 40 and 60% because that's just the nature of baseball. But then the next two starts that Jacob deGrom is scheduled for, the odds are 75.7% and 77.5%.
I love
That's
that.
the deGrom effect right there.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
He's
he's
been
been so
unreal.
good. He's been so good. Yeah. So I mean, the Braves 6-0 in September. So they've been playing pretty
Pretty
damn
good.
good. Yeah. I think that is 7 in a row that they've won. But they play at Seattle, at the Giants, so and then host the Phillies, host the Nationals. So it's a pretty difficult West Coast trip for the Braves. I mean, obviously, it's difficult because of the Oakland, but putting that aside, Seattle's a postseason team, and the Giants are—they're not what they were last season, but they're still—you can drop a couple of games to them, and you find yourself back, 3 games to the Mets, and the Mets keep rolling if the Mets roll.
Yeah, we did mention the Mets have a very favorable schedule on the stretch. So, they got to try to take advantage of that, but it's not going to be as easy as we thought it would be last week. I mean,
No.
with Scherzer on the IL now, and Starling Marte
That
has a
hurts.
partial non-displaced fracture of his right middle finger. So, He's listed as day to day. I don't know how long it's going to keep him out or how much it's going to affect him, but he's one of their big pieces. So they need all they can get with the Braves are on their tail.
Absolutely. 131 OPS plus are losing from him. And like you said, Max Scherzer now being out on the 15-day IL. Hopefully they can get him back before the end of the season. He's been pitching to a 2.26 ERA and a FIP 2.53. So of course, excuse me, he's been really, really good. Who fills in that last rotation spot?
David Peterson, right?
I guess. Well, it's Bassett, Carrasco, Walker, Peterson. Yeah, Jacob deGrom. So
Which Peterson's been pretty good this year. Like it's a downgrade from Scherzer because I
yeah,
mean it's
he's not
almost
Max
always going to
Scherzer.
be a downgrade from Max Scherzer, right? But
Right.
David Peterson's had a nice year. I mean, 3.32 ERA, 3.54 FIP. Like he's been solid, so you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just the bullpen's looked a little shaky at times through this stretch. I don't really know if I have as much confidence in them as I did, but yeah, no, it's a pivotal stretch for the Mets. And I guess the overarching question is, like, is this where the Mets fall apart? Is this what does it?
Man, wouldn't that be
We
disheartening if they look so awesome for 5 months?
have gone so far. No, they're going to make the postseason. Like, it's almost a lock for them. Like, it's going to be very hard for them to not make the postseason, especially with how the Padres and the Phillies and the Brewers have been playing, which the Brewers are kind of creeping up on the Phillies and Padres. That can be a different conversation. Yeah, it's, but I mean, still, it's, you have to get Scherzer back for the postseason if you've been playing this far, but if playing the way that they've been, but
I mean,
it's looking like they're pulling the Mets.
the Mets do have 100% playoff odds according to Fangraphs, but the thing is, you want to win that division because you would really like to have the first round bye and not have to play a 3-game wild card series. So that matters.
Yeah, I guess just doing some quick calculations, if they were not to win the division, they would probably play either the Phillies or the Cardinals. Phillies or Braves? No, it'd be the Phillies. It'd be the Phillies.
Most likely. And the Mets, according to Fangraphs, do still have about 2/3 odds to win the division. So they're still hedging their bets there. But I mean, you're right. The Braves have been playing really good ball of late. They're still rolling right now. The big advantage the Mets have is really just they face an easier schedule on the stretch.
Yeah, so like I said, like Braves and the trip to Seattle, those games this weekend, series against Seattle is going to be very interesting. I don't think they'll catch Luis Castillo because he pitched yesterday. Maybe it'll be that Sunday game they go, but which is big. But they'll probably get Robbie Ray. I mean, the Braves' offense has just looked really, really awesome. So
How much does it upset you the Mariners have 99.4% playoff odds?
I mean, I'm not pumped about it, but it's not like it bothers me. It's like, I don't think they're not going to win the World Series. I give that much. I
Oh,
can tell you that
okay. You don't
much.
know that.
So I
I think
do
that's
know
what we were
that.
saying about the Braves going into last postseason.
We'll have to check the tape on that. I hope not. But the Seattle Mariners, as a franchise, are incapable of winning the World Series. I'm gonna say that right now.
I
They're
hope
not going
you're
to do
wrong.
it.
I hope you're wrong because what I want to see in the postseason this year is a team that has not won the World Series before win it. And the Mariners are one of the few teams that's going to be in the postseason that meets that qualification. Like if Tampa makes it, which they probably will at this point, then they could be that team also. If the Brewers make it, which I mean, maybe like their odds aren't super good, but if they do, then they have a chance. Or the Padres. So it'd be one of those three teams for me. That's where I want to win it. Somebody that hasn't won it before.
Have the Orioles won the World Series?
I guess Cleveland hasn't
Yeah, they
won it.
have.
They have, but Cleveland has the longest drought going right now. So
Right.
I'd be okay with that too. Like I don't hate Cleveland as much as I used to because they got like a really
Sure.
like they got a fun roster right now, a bunch of fun young guys. They got Jose Ramirez. They changed their name, so I'm cool with them, but.
Yeah. And like Shane Bieber's fucking okay. Also, sorry, we're on tension on the Guardians. Zach Plesac, like he broke his hand punching the ground after giving up a bomb.
Yeah.
What
Unbelievable. You
you
don't
can't do that
throw
because he
punches
does
with your
something
pitching
else like
hand.
that. Yeah, right.
You
Yeah, I think
obviously
he's more
never
of an
watched Bull
offensive guy.
Durham.
I actually haven't had it. So.
Yeah, of course. You've watched like two baseball movies, and one of them is Major League that you watched like 17 times.
I think two out of three is Major League, and then I think it's Major League. Well, so four: Major League Two, Major League again, The Sandlot, finally in Trouble with the Curve.
I like how one of the few that you've watched is like one of the worst ones.
Hey man, it was an ex-girlfriend. All right, I had to. So,
Stay
all
tuned
right.
for the upcoming baseball movie tier list that we do
Fucking
in
eventually, at some point in
2027
time.
when Brendan finally gets around to watching all the movies.
Were we supposed to do that last off season? Like,
Yeah,
nah,
so
I ain't gonna watch
you
this
didn't watch
shit.
not even like you didn't watch all of them. You didn't watch any of them. Like you made no progress.
I watched
We had an entire lockout and you made no progress.
I watched Major League again,
That's
just to
not
get
helpful.
refresher.
Man, I got
Off
around
the
to watching most of
rails.
them. Come on, you don't have that much going on. You let me sit down and watch some
I
movies.
got school
I think Taylor
college.
will like at least some of them.
I'm getting married in a month, dude. I got plenty of stuff going on. But
It's huge.
yeah, no,
Exactly
I'll
1 month from today. Huge.
exactly 1 month from today. But yeah, I did tell Taylor at some point in time that she's gonna have to sit down and watch a couple of these with me because it's gonna be a thing. So where do we even start this conversation? The Mets, Greg. I
Yes.
think we both picked the Mets to win the NL East. Are you still feeling confident in that? Because I'm not.
I'm still gonna stick with them, but I'm very stubborn about changing my picks. But that's a
Yeah.
like they still have the easy schedule. They still have a very good roster. Like the rotation, they're gonna
No.
miss Scherzer, but not that much because
Right.
Peterson's still a good starting option. So it's not like they're replacing him with just AAA filler.
Yeah.
So I still feel good about them because we mentioned they haven't been playing great ball, but it's not like they've been bad. I mean, they took two or three from the Dodgers like last week.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And like you said, like David Peterson, he's made 17 starts. He's pitched 95 innings. There's no small sample size. He's been good this season. Obviously, he's not Scherzer, but he can fill in. The bullpen, like I said, gives me some concerns. Excuse me. Michael Gibbons has not been good. Yoan Lopez has not been good. Joely Rodriguez has not been good. But the back end of the bullpen has been exceptional. It's just the offense needs to get going. And I think that, I don't know if the injuries are necessarily going to catch up to him, but you need something out of the catcher position, right? You need something, some sort of production at some point in time. So I am also going to stick with the Mets. I don't feel as good about it, but I do think that they're in a better position given their schedule.
I still don't understand why the Mets didn't trade for Wilson Contreras. But anyway,
I don't know.
let's move on now. So, Brendan, since the All-Star break, third in the majors in WAR is Adley Rutschman. So give him the goddamn rookie of the year. That's my rookie of the year right there. But what
He's
was
mine
actually the
too.
talking point here? So in weighted runs created plus since the All-Star break, first is Aaron Judge because he has just been on an unreal tear since the All-Star break. 338, 490, 828. That's an 828 slugging. So a 260 weighted runs created plus. That's pretty good. I think he has the
That's
AL MVP pretty much sewn up at this point.
yeah.
And third in the majors in weighted runs created plus since the All-Star break is Paul Goldschmidt at 204. He's been doing the damn thing. So
MVP.
who's second? Brandon, second place is Rangers first baseman Nathaniel Lowe with a 207 weighted runs created plus since the All-Star break. He is hitting 371, 426, 646. He has hit 12 home runs in the second half, matching his first half total. He has been on an absolute tear, and I want to get this out there right now. I hear so many people, they're like, oh, is it Lowe or Lowe? I don't know. The only Lowe is Brandon. That's the only Lau is the Rays second baseman is Brandon. The rest of them are all low. Okay. Just it's not that hard. Tangent over on that. Nathaniel Lowe has been on an unreal heater in the second half.
How the Rays didn't trade for him at the trade deadline, I don't know. I don't
They
understand. Because
used
he'd
to
be
have
perfect for
him.
him. They could accumulate all the lows and lows.
They traded him to the Rangers. They used to have him.
I love that. So now he's been on tear. I don't know what to tell you. He's been really good.
And he's got the season numbers up to pretty impressive totals now on the season. He has a 148 weighted runs created plus. He was at 114 last year, so massive improvement. Is some of this Babbitt fueled? Yes, but even if you
Tall.
subtract that a little bit, he has been hitting for way more power this year in general, especially in the second half, as he did last year. He's striking out less too, just putting the ball in play more often and making hard contact. So love to see it. He has already handily eclipsed his home run total from last year. He has a very good shot at getting to 30 this year. And hey, look, Rangers haven't had a super awesome season. But we talk about that infield, man. I mean, Marcus Semien, Corey Seager, Nathaniel Lowe on this hot stretch, and now Josh Young coming up to take third
Yeah.
base. That could be a really fun infield next year.
That could be a really good one. He mentioned some BABIP luck, sure. I mean, last year in 157 games, he hit 264. .415, .771 OPS. So, like, I mean, when he's been playing full time, because with the Rays, he didn't really play full time, of course not. But, like, he's been a pretty damn good hitter in his 2 years in Texas. Again, being an everyday hitter, 128 OPS plus. Like, they might have something here. He's only 27, strikes out a fuck ton, but I know he still
22.1% is not a high strikeout rate. Now the walks have come down this year, which is a little bit odd, but it could just be part of the approach. Like, hey, I'm not going to take as many walks. I'm going to swing a bit more and put the bat on the ball more and drive more balls. Hence more power production, hitting for a higher average. The BABIP might not be sustainable, sure, but nonetheless, he has improved from just a slightly above average hitter to a very good hitter this year.
Yeah, I mean, his hard hit percentage is basically the same from last year, but he's having 7%, hitting 7% more line drives and 7% less ground balls. So he's getting the ball in the air, which, as we know, it's hard to hit home runs when you hit a lot of ground balls. Eric Hosmer. Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, they might have something here. And you mentioned with that infield, they've got, like, what, $500 million invested in the middle infield. You get guys like him relatively cheap. Not to say he's not worth the money, but, you know, guys like him and a young guy like Josh Young coming up, like, that's really good infield. So they are still a little bit farther away, but I think getting the production out of Nathaniel Lau like they are now is
Nathaniel
nice.
Nathaniel
Lau. Yeah, no, I think it's a really good it's a really good addition, and I think that this could be a lot of fun to watch. And again, his time as a full time starter in Texas, he's been hitting very well. So I think that that's very encouraging. It's not just this year; he'd hit above average last year as well.
Really quick rundown of Josh Young's minor league numbers in his career. 2019 in rookie ball, 308 weighted runs created plus. 2019 in low A, 121. 2021 in double A, 140. 2021 in triple A, 166. 2022 in the complex league, 147. And this year in triple A, 102. And now he's getting promoted.
Yeah. He's been pretty good. Yeah, I'm excited for him. I think he starts tomorrow.
Huge. We love to see it.
Yeah.
Who's going to have a better major league career, him or his younger brother?
Oh, him for sure.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. You're low on Jace Young just from what one scout told you one time.
Greg, that is a major
play this year.
Yes, we were there. That is a major league baseball scout telling us what he thinks of a player. I have had no other conversations with any other scouts saying the otherwise. Yes, I'm going to take his word for it.
I think he'll be good. Over 1,000 every year at college.
I think metal bats. I think he'll be good. Don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be a major league player. I don't think he's going to be good as his brother.
Yeah, the concern for me there is that, like, I think Josh Young is most likely going to stick at third base, but I still have no idea where Jace is going to play.
It's got to be second base. I don't know if the bat will play enough for DH, but it's got to be second base, right?
I don't know if the range is going to stick in second. He could probably play a corner outfield, but that's not as valuable as an infield spot.
If his range can't fit at second base,
Kyle Schwarber plays a corner outfield spot.
I
think he's rangier than Kyle Schwarber.
I guess. I don't know. I have questions about Jace Young, but I do think he'll be a major league baseball player. I just think I like his brother a lot more. That's all I'll say.
Real quick, Jace Young stat check. In high A, he's played 26 games, hitting .247, .393, .344. So not much power, but walking 19.7% of the time.
Wow, not much power. Shocker. Never could have called that one, Greg.
I think it'll come around.
26 games, I'm aware, but his brother's a lot more polished of a hitter. Maybe he doesn't have the pop, but he's more polished and he's better defensively.
Yeah, fun fact, Jace actually did put up better numbers at Texas Tech than Josh did.
Sure, that's fine.
Yeah, my concerns for him is just I think Josh would be like a better all-around player, but I think Jace might be the better hitter.
We'll see. I'm not arguing.
That's how it is with prospects. We'll see. By the way, Gavin Cross raking.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
Sonny DeShara.
Oh, Zach Neto. Yep. My guy.
Ben Joy is still throwing heat. Okay, not a college baseball pod.
not yet.
Not today.
Give us a few more months. Give us a few more months. Probably more than a few more months. Yeah, we'll see.
Breaking news, Brendan. There are to be rule changes starting next year that we kind of already knew were going to happen, that we discussed over the offseason. But now that we know they're official, just get some quick thoughts out about them. Don't need to really litigate the entire thing. So, bigger bases. Fine.
Cool.
Cool. Okay, yeah, cool.
I had trouble seeing them on the field anyway, so good.
Yes. So, next one. There will be a limit of two disengagement moves on the rubber per plate appearance for a pitcher. Disengagement moves means either pickoffs or just like stepping off or whatever. So basically, two pickoffs per plate appearances for pitchers. I am in favor of this. Let's make the stolen base great again. I'm here for it.
That came out of nowhere, but yeah, that's fine, I guess.
It's been tested in the minor leagues. I've seen it in the minors when it has been tested. Stolen base attempts have skyrocketed. So,
Oh,
man,
I'm
I love stolen
sure.
bases. So I'm here for it. Yes.
Wait, that's because your favorite team, the only way to create offense is with a stolen base, so of course you love this,
The
but
only player on the team that steals now is Bobby. That's it. Modesty's been hurt all year.
that's also true. Nico Lopez, he's fast.
He's stolen like 12. I don't know. Whit
Young
Merrifield's
guys
not
are
on the team anymore.
fast.
Regardless, I think stolen.
Interesting.
I can't think of very many baseball fans who be like, no, stolen bases suck. Like, I don't want to see guys steal bases. No, everybody, stolen bases are cool. Everybody wants to see stolen bases. Let's bring them back. People don't steal
No,
anymore.
absolutely, and I like that. I'm just more thinking about, well, how am I supposed to give my reliever more time to warm up if I can't throw over six times in a row? And I can't visit the mound six times, so what am I supposed to do?
How are we going to boo pitchers for throwing over five straight times?
What if I do it a third time? What happens? Would you call a balk on me?
Yeah, that would be the rule. Actually, I call it
Oh,
a
is
balk.
it? Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
that's exactly. You nailed it. So I'm cool with it. I like it. I like stolen bases, so I like that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Like I said, that wasn't talked about in the CBA, was it? That's like kind of something that's a little bit new,
It
but
was brought up, but it didn't get the headlines that the next
sure.
two did, which is the pitch clock. I'm in favor of it, speeding up the pace of play a little bit, just eliminating dead time, because really that's all it is, cutting down on time where nothing is happening.
Right.
Some pitchers, especially relievers, are really going to struggle with it. So I'm curious as to how the early season is going to look.
Who did we go see in person that took a really, really fucking long time? Was it Sean Manaea
Well, no, Manaea
the
was
last time?
starting, but maybe
I
he
don't
quit.
remember. Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of guys do, especially like I was watching the Royals game against the Guardians last night and noticed, like, man, James Karinchak takes a really
Yeah.
long time between pitches. Also, I noticed after every pitch, he touches his hair and then touches the rosin bag. Did he find a new way to employ sticky stuff? Maybe. Well, disregard
You
that for now, but something to keep in mind. So anyway, a pitch clock, I mean, I'm cool with it. I'm
you
fine with
think
it.
takes the longest time?
Last time I looked, I think it was like Giovanni Gallegos.
It is not. It is Kenley Jansen
Of
at
course.
26.1, then Gallegos and Kyle Finnegan, Dominic Leone, Hunter Strickland with the bases empty. Runners on base, it is Giovanni Gallegos, 31.6, then Kenley Jansen, Devin Williams.
I like
So,
watching Brady Singer pitch because he works fast.
yeah, Frankie Montas also takes fucking forever. That's who it was. We didn't see him in person, but I do remember that. Yeah, Frankie Montas takes fucking forever.
Classic. So yeah, eliminate dead time. Let's go. Also, a fun note here. With the bases empty, four of the top 13 pitchers in fastest tempo play for the Giants. So good for you with the pace of play, Giants. Anyway,
Sure. Corbin, one of those guys. Not
the
on
last
Giants,
one.
but.
Yeah, fourth overall. The last one, banning the shift. We talked a lot about this over the offseason when we discussed this. I'm going to put a very detailed piece about this on Royals Review, probably in the offseason. I hate it. I don't think it's going to solve anything. I think it's only going to benefit the one-dimensional pull-happy sluggers that everybody already rags on anyway. So I'm not in favor of this. I don't like it. I think it's stupid.
Do you think Joey Gallo will hit more singles?
I guess so. Yeah. If they can't put three infielders on the right side, then yeah, he probably will. Great. Joey Gallo gets to hit more singles. Cool. He
Awesome.
doesn't have to. He doesn't have to make adjustments to adjust for the fact that the defense is playing him because he only hits the ball in one spot ever. Like, wow, let's make batters not make adjustments. I understand that's very difficult with how good pitching is. But to keep it short here, the issue isn't shifts. The issue is that pitchers are really, really, really good now. And there
No.
has to be something done to mitigate that. I don't know what it is beyond like moving the mound or rate or like lowering it or banning the slider or something. But regardless, banning the shift isn't going to help.
First of all, Sandy Alcantara is now off the hook with David Robertson blowing the save, whatever. What was the argument for abandoning the shift? I don't remember. Like, is more offense or what was the.
More singles. Yeah, people are tired of hitting balls like up the middle and a position player being right there. Or like hitting a ball in a shallow right field and the second baseman playing out there. It was literally that. It was people like, oh no, the infielders aren't standing in the default spots.
So typical Major League Baseball is contradicting because more offense would mean longer games. They will, and then the pitch clock would shorten the game. Doesn't make any sense to me. I've never really understood. It's defensive positioning. Like, you don't ban defensive positioning in any other sport, right? I mean, I guess there's
Well, no, I mean,
offsides in soccer, but
in football.
yeah, to a
Now,
certain
football
extent,
is an
but
incredibly weird sport in general, really. In basketball, I mean, you can't just stand under the basket. So I get it from that sense. Like, yeah,
not to this extent.
other sports have like rules on positioning. It's just the fact that I don't think it's going to really solve anything. I think it's just a solution in search of a problem.
Yeah, I did almost spill this entire beer all over my desk, but I caught it. Good
Smooth.
for me. But
It's
yeah, I don't
officially
know.
the rule is when the pitcher releases the ball, there has to be two infielders on each side of the second base bag, and all of them have to be standing in the dirt. So, yes, you can move like after the pitcher is throwing the ball still, but you can't do like the extreme shifts that we see where like you have an infielder posted up in like shallow right field or like
Right.
stacking up three infielders on the left side of the bag. You can't do that. So,
Yeah.
look, I'm not in favor of it. I think teams will still find some kind of way to do some like tactical shifts, like put one of your like if a Rhys Hoskins is up or something, like have your second baseman standing right next to the second base bag and just move over once the pitcher throws. But still, it's I don't think it's the solution. I don't think it's going to help anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't love it. Are you gonna have the so it's second base. It can't be one side of second base. Like, are you gonna have the chalk lines like doing the minor leagues, or is not that extreme?
I have no idea. I didn't see
Also, is
that.
that a challengeable play? Yeah.
Oh no,
Yeah.
no, we don't need to introduce more replay
Yeah.
review.
Oh yeah.
No.
I think look at I can see it now. The pitcher is releasing the baseball. And then you have the side view of someone with that Maginot line, whatever. Yeah. Ooh, that's gonna be interesting.
Oh, why did you have to bring that? I hadn't
Yeah.
even thought of that.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
hate it more.
I don't know. I just didn't think it was really that big of a problem. And you spoke to it. Pitchers are really fucking good, and they're really good pitching to where their defense is. So I don't know. I don't love it. I don't think it's necessary, but I mean, to me, this is going to probably end up being like the three batter minimum with pitchers. Like, it seems like a big deal. I don't like it, but it may not end up being that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I was cool with the three batter minimum at the time, but I don't know. I don't like this, but you know, that's enough on that. We went into detail in the off season on that, so whatever. Let's talk about Albert Pujols because he is
Yes.
still going on his record chase, and man, he is in spitting distance.
695 home runs. Notes say 27 games left. I don't know if that's still accurate. Probably, guarantee it's not because this was a couple days ago and the Cardinals have played a game since. But like, we both said you didn't think you'd get to 700, right?
Yeah, I said he would have to go on a major heater in the last month to do it. And well, he's hit one home run in September. So he said that he got one hit pinch hit run against the Cubs on September 4th.
Yeah. 26 games left. He obviously starts against lefties. He pinch hits against righties. I mean, five home run, that's one every five games. Like, that's very doable. But
He needs to get more playing time than I think he has been throughout the season to do it.
you know what? Excuse me. The Cardinals are kind of pulling away the division. He might get more playing time. He might. Especially if he's so close. And I don't think I think he comes back next year.
He has 23 games remaining, by the way. I just counted them. So 23 opportunities to get into the game. I don't think so. I don't think he comes back next year, though. Like, I think he's pretty set on retiring.
I don't know. I don't know, man. It's a tough situation. I can't imagine being in that situation. But 695, he needs one more to tie A-Rod, two more to go into fourth place all time. Obviously, five more to get to 700, being the only fourth player to ever do so. So I think he'll pass A-Rod. I don't know if he gets to
Oh, he
700.
has to pass A-Rod at this point, right?
He cannot. And look, if you don't get to 700, that's one thing. You can't stay tied with A-Rod. You have to
No.
pass A-Rod. Come back, and once you hit 697 and retire, I don't give a fuck. You cannot be tied with A-Rod.
No, that would be the most disappointing possible outcome is if he retires,
No.
remaining tied with A-Rod.
The most disappointing would be he retires at 695 behind A-Rod.
Okay, I guess that would too.
But yeah, no, I don't know if he gets 700. I really want him to. I don't know if we'll ever see someone get this close again. And it's unfortunate that he's so old. He's so dead set on not coming back. But I don't know, man. Like if he gets like 698, you can't tell me you won't want to come back after that. And the Cardinals, oh, they'll take him for sure. They'll take him.
Oh,
He'll have an offer.
100%.
He'll have an offer. Whether he's
Looking at the
go
schedule
ahead.
coming up in their next several games, the next 2 weeks or so, they're only projected to face two lefty starters in that span. That is matching up against Mike Minor on September 17th and Blake Snell on September 21st. No projected starts against lefties. So in the next week, they need to find some playing time for him against righty pitchers. Just get him in there. I know he's not good against right-handed pitchers, but I mean,
He
you
can still
get
run into
somewhat of a
one.
cushion, and you get to play the Pirates for nine more games this year and the Reds for four, so you have chances. You should just do it. Just put them in.
Yeah, no, and I think the Cardinals will because look, they are 9.5 games up over the Brewers. The Brewers are okay. I mean, like I think they'll be able to give even just for like rest for the postseason. Like they'll give Cole. You see, give Paul Goldschmidt some time off, but I don't know. But
Just DH him. Just DH
DH him,
Pujols.
yeah.
Every
Or
day. Every day.
if you want to give Paul Goldschmidt some rest, you'd put Albert at first base. I don't know if you really want Albert at first base, but you put him at first
He
base.
can handle it, right? It's first
Yeah,
base.
yeah. So
I'm good
I don't
playing
know.
first
I
base.
just I really for me the more realistic goal is 697. I want to see that, but really I want him to come back next year.
697 is absolutely achievable. I mean, only two more home runs. He can do that. Come on. Come on, Albert.
Come on. I'm gonna knock on so much wood.
Knock on all the woods. So, and live news, the Marlins have just taken the lead over the Phillies. Good job, Phillies bullpen.
Yeah, classic Phillies bullpen imploding when they don't really need to do. Yeah.
It
In the
had to
midst of a
happen.
postseason race. They are tied with the Padres 4 games over the Brewers. 10.5 games behind the Braves. So do we think the Phillies are we done with Albert Pujols?
Yeah.
Phillies and Padres, how do you feel about them? Before you get into whatever you're gonna do next, like the Brewers
I
aren't.
say, let's go Padres. And dude, I don't trust the Phillies. I've never trusted the Phillies. I never will trust the Phillies.
So, do you trust the Brewers coming back 4 games under to catch the Phillies and/or the Padres, or do you just trust the Phillies to stumble in ass first into the playoffs?
I don't know. I think I already said it was going to kind of remain like it is. But you know what? No, Brewers are going to overtake the Phillies because I don't trust the Phillies.
Corbin Burns today. I think he went 7 innings, 14 strikeouts against the Giants.
That's pretty good.
He's a stud. Got me 38 points from beat Stapes. It's great.
Huge. Oh, you know it's a 2 week matchup,
Yeah.
It's far from over.
Yeah. I'm gonna beat him. The Rays took 2 or 3 against the Yankees. They're now only 5 games back. How do you feel about that race? I
I don't
know.
think they will, but I mean, man, the way the Yankees just keep on stumbling and falling
And
apart.
it was a low strike three call to end the game on game three, or else the Rays would have gotten Yandy Diaz on. They could have like swept that series.
Huge. Yeah, you know what? Let's just have the Rays overtake the Yankees. Just fuck it. Just make their season like a
Yeah.
second half. Make their second half just a complete nightmare. Get the
Yes.
Orioles in the playoffs. Let's go.
I would say, as the Orioles like to say, 4.5 games back. I don't know if they're gonna do it, dude.
I know, but shut up.
Chaos! Give
Let's
us
go. Make it
chaos!
chaos.
Have Seattle implode. Chaos.
The Seattle's not going to implode. I think they're pretty much in at this point.
I wouldn't put it past them, the Mariners.
Yeah, I mean, they still hold the second wild card. The Mariners aren't going to implode. Like, that wouldn't be what gets Baltimore in the playoffs. Let's go. Eddie Rushman. Anyway, Brandon, let's move on now to potentially the worst baseball article that I have read this year.
Holy
Now,
shit.
this is only the second time that I think we've broken down an article on the pod. The only previous one was the Rob Manfred propaganda that ESPN put out earlier this year. And that
Which
one
was
was a
worthy.
trip. This one was from a much more, I'll generously just call them niche publication. This comes courtesy of Yard Barker, which I think you're about to say this. I've never heard of Yard Barker either
That is correct.
until I saw this piece. Somebody in the Royals Review Slack shared this, and I read it, and I was like, oh my God. Wow. So it is entitled One Player on Every MLB Team Who Deserves More Love, written by Justin Mears. This was updated
Shots to
2 days
Justin
ago, by the way.
Mears.
Keep this in mind. So just the quick intro here. All 30 MLB teams have household names on their rosters. I don't think that's really true, but all-star caliber players aren't the ones that make dramatic differences during the course of a 162-game season. Role players often decide pennant races and later postseason games. Let's dive into a player from every club who should be getting more love from the national audience. So, starts out innocuously enough. I mean, New York Yankees catcher Jose Trevino. Okay, I mean, he was
All-star.
an all-star this year, yeah, so I think he's already gotten recognition, but sure, he's having a really good
Sure.
season. Nick Pivetta, like, yeah, he has been the Red Sox best pitcher because their pitching
My
staff has
God.
been really, really bad, but he's been okay.
I
Now go ahead.
are we gonna go through, like, if you don't agree with this, like, give a guy? Because if so, I think Michael Wacha should be Boston Red Sox guy.
Now, I'm just going to go through the highlights here. So, like,
All right.
like I said, starts out innocently enough. Blue Jays, Alejandro Kirk. Like, yeah, I think he deserves love. Kirk's
All-star.
awesome. Yeah, also all-star. Then it starts getting progressively weirder because next it goes to the AL Central. And for the Royals, they selected Hunter Dozier, who they list as a first baseman, even though I guess you could list him as a utility player, but he's not good defensively anywhere.
When was the
Middle
last time he played
touches.
first base?
He's played first base this year at some point. I don't
Yeah,
know
so
how recently, but he's
I'll
played,
look.
the article mentions he's played all of the corner positions for the Royals, and that's correct. He has been bad at all of the corner positions for the Royals. That is correct. And if you look at the Fangraphs WAR leaderboard, in last place among all qualified hitters, you will find Hunter Dozier at negative 0.9 Fangraphs WAR, just behind Marcell Ozuna and Nelson Cruz. He has a 91 weighted runs created plus, so he's a below average hitter that is bad everywhere defensively.
He last started at first base August 24th.
Okay, so
So
not
I
too long
guess more
ago.
recently. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I text you this. The last sentence, I mean, is a dangerous middle of the lineup right-handed bat. No, he's
That
not.
is very generous to call him a dangerous middle of the lineup bat. Like I said,
He
he's a
hits in the
below
middle of
average
li
hitter.
he hits in the middle of the lineup. Sure, he shouldn't. He's not dangerous at all.
He has a 295 on base percentage and 10 home runs this year. I would not describe that as dangerous.
Kansas City season is going to be a success regardless how they finish.
That's
I
not
don't think
true either.
so. I don't think
No.
so. No.
We thought they might be like around 500, like a little bit below probably, but at least around 500. They're going to be closer to 100 losses than 500 this year. And Bobby Witt Jr. also has an on base percentage below 300.
But another steady offensive player is not well known enough nationally. Well, for a fucking reason.
He's steady, all right. He's not good, but he's steady.
Yeah, that's just
For
yikes.
the Angels, their player deserves more love is Brandon Marsh, which I suppose you should love Brandon Marsh. He doesn't play for the Angels, but I
We can
suppose you
appreciate
still
we
love
can
him.
Angels eat, so it's close enough, right? We can appreciate from him from afar.
Yeah, I guess. Appreciate him from a distance. Texas Rangers, Nathaniel Lowe, my God. I just did it too. My God.
Son of
Nathaniel
a bitch.
Lowe, that's huge. Oakland A's, Paul Blackburn. What do you think? He had a really good first half, at least.
He was an all-star, so I think he got enough love nationally. For the A's, I would say, so first of all, for the Royals, who would be your pick if you wrote this article, this dumbass article?
As in, like, an underappreciated player that I think needs to get more props.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott Barlow, I guess. Like, maybe
Maybe.
Singer. Probably
Yeah,
be Singer, I
I think
guess.
so. For me, I'm thinking like Sean Murphy would be the obvious pick. He's not been an all-star, but he's been very good.
He's been
And he,
like the second best catcher in the American League.
yeah, another niche one for me would be also Elvis Andrus hit a solo home run in the first against the A's in his return to Oakland with the White Sox. So that's awesome. I would say like Tony Kemp would be an interesting one. Like he's not a great hitter, but like defensively, he's been pretty rock solid at second base. Like he's just kind of a niche guy who he always leads off. He's had a good season last year, not great. Like Tony Kemp would be a good one, but I do think it'd be Sean Murphy.
The Phillies entry is Garrett Stubbs. He's their backup catcher. Garrett Stubbs has played 42 games this year. And I'm very curious, when was this article written? I really need to know. Like, was it actually written 2 days ago? Because I want to know what rosters, like what numbers the author was looking at when he was writing this.
Yeah. I mean, Garrett Stubbs, 150 OPS plus in 39 games. So cool.
It also leads off with the Phillies are underachieving once again. I guess if 14 games over 500 and holding a playoff spot counts as underachieving, then yeah, I guess they're underachieving. I thought they'd be worse, frankly. So here we are.
Sounds about right. You did skip over the Mets, Luis Guillorme. I mean, he's not really been playing for the Mets this year, has he?
I mean, he's a good utility player. He's injured right now, but
Yeah, I mean that one is automatically Jacob deGrom to me. He needs more love. I know he's like an all-star, like probably one of the best pitchers on the planet, but he needs more love
give
to
him
me.
more love. Reds, Brandon
Or
Drury.
Mark Canna, but yeah, continue.
Reds, Brandon Drury, which famously he does not currently play for the Cincinnati Reds. So
Yeah.
that's a weird
Now,
one.
the one thing I will say is that I don't think this article was necessarily written 2 days ago, because this clip here says he signed with the Reds as a minor league free agent in March, and Cincinnati would certainly like to capitalize on his breakout at the trading deadline. So to me, I feel like this was before, but it did say edited when you said to me, it said edited 6 hours ago, and it says edited 2 days ago. So something
What did
happened.
they edit?
I don't know, not this one or the Philly or the Angels, but I mean, not this, but yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with a lot of these. Like the Pirates, JT Brubaker, he's been good, sure, but like O'Neill Cruz is there. I mean,
For the Rockies, the player who deserves more love is Connor Joe, who has an 88 weighted runs created plus and has put up 0.1 WAR this year.
hey, he needs more love. Yeah, I don't know. Like Wilmer Flores from the Giants, like he's been, let me look, Wilmer Flores. I think he's been okay, but like the offense has not been great for the Giants. Wilmer Flores is hitting to 110 OPS plus, 242, 17 home runs. Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I don't know. You're right. Point being, it's a weird article. I do think they got Dalton Varsho right for the
No,
Diamondbacks.
not the entire article is a total disaster. I mean, it's just the fact that they updated it 2 days ago and didn't bother to update the fact that two of the players no longer even play for those teams. And including Hunter Dozier on there is just egregious because he's been the worst position player in baseball this year.
Right, yeah. To me, they're like, what's the one player that I haven't heard of? Hunter Dozier. Let's do him. Let's do that guy. The Nationals, Josiah Gray, interesting pick for him as well. Leads the Major League Baseball in home runs allowed and leads the National League in walks. He's not developed fantastic at the Major League level, but he is an interesting pick. I would pick, I don't know, Cesar Hernandez maybe, but
Cesar Hernandez.
No, I yeah, there's some weird ones on here, but it's not far off, right? Like Keegan Thompson for the Cubs, like former under the radar pitcher of the week. Obviously, he's this person's listening to the podcast. I do like that pick. He does need some more love, but I like Luis Garcia. Not that Luis Garcia, this Luis Garcia for the Nationals. Like he's hitting to a
Yes.
111 OPS plus, lefty bat. I mean, 293, 305. So I think that only five walks in the 71 games, but I think he would be a good pick. So yeah, it was just a weird article. I've never heard of the Yard Barker, but I mean, I'm not going to really read any more into this.
Now, I'm not going to look further into this source. I haven't heard of it previously, and the first piece that I read didn't really make much sense. So I'm not gonna go any further. I don't think I really need to.
The leading article on the Yard Barker is this time, quote, Naked Gun star Reggie Jackson act. Reggie Jackson actually met the Queen.
Why are we all memorializing the queen? She's not even the queen of my fucking country. Like, I don't care. In
It's
fact, I'm okay with it. She lived
yeah.
for a million years already. Lizard people tend to be pretty hardy, so.
It's just of course we're still recording, but just the historical aspect. Like, she was born in 1926. Like she's the oldest serving head of state. Oldest living head of state that served in World War II. Like that part of it is, whether you agree with the politics or not, whatever, but like that is significant enough for me, but whatever.
Yes, rest in peace, the Lizard Queen. Anyway. Let's move on here to our last segment.
Oh
So,
God. Dylan Cease against the A's. Oh no.
this was something that I randomly decided to undertake a couple weeks ago because we frequently banter about the relationship between WAR and MVP voting. And I do want to clarify that I feel like I haven't really articulated my stance very well on it. Of I don't think MVP award is a WAR award, as you like to say. And I don't think it should be,
It's
because then
not.
you could just look at a leaderboard and call it a day, which, I mean, then you get into the weeds of, oh, which WAR do we use? But that'd be stupid. So that's why they have voters for it. Now, I do think WAR is the single best number that we have to quantify how valuable a player is this year. I think it can be very informative in kind of your thought process behind the decision. And so I think, yeah, I'm going to look at that as my starting point and say that Nolan Arenado should be in consideration. That was kind of my main point. Not that, okay, whoever finishes first in Fangraphs WAR should be the MVP every year. So
Sure.
I decided to go ahead and look back anyway and kind of cross-reference between WAR and MVP voting. And so it started out very, very simply. I just looked back at the past 15 full seasons of MVP votes. So that's 2006 through 2021, neglecting 2020 because that's not a full season. And just comparing, did the WAR leader win MVP? That's it. I did Baseball Reference
Sure.
WAR and Fangraphs WAR. And so in those 30 MVPs, in Fangraphs WAR, 16 of the 30 MVPs were the Fangraphs WAR leader. Six of them, besides that, were within the margin of error, because if they're within about one WAR, then I think that's fine because there's only a certain level of precision a stat really achieves. So if a guy has like 7.3 WAR versus 7 WAR, I mean, they're basically the same at that point. Like, that's fine, whatever. And then there
Right.
was eight, they were like weird and very far off. And I'm just like, why? Like Jose Altuve over Aaron Judge in 2017. I think at the time, most people thought that was the wrong decision. And looking back on it now, I still think it was the wrong decision because
Yeah.
Aaron Judge led Jose Altuve in like every category possible except for batting average, basically.
Sure.
They gave it to Altuve because he's short. Like, that's whatever. And like Miguel Cabrera
Well,
with the triple crown in 2012 and the triple slash line triple crown in 2013. 2011, they gave it to a pitcher in the American League. 2006, they gave it to Justin Morneau and Ryan Howard for some reason. I hate the
cool.
2006 MVP awards. That was really poorly done.
Different
And
time.
it was fairly similar for Baseball Reference WAR too. 14 of the Baseball Reference WAR leaders out of the 30 MVPs, and also six within the margin of error. So that was how I started out, but I wasn't really satisfied with that. So I decided to go
Can't
deeper.
be.
And when I sent you a picture of my email that was entitled "WAR is a WAR Award" or like "MVP is not a WAR Award" or whatever, something like that in quotes,
Yeah.
I think that inspired you to do a similar study. So before we get into mine, Brendan, I want to hear about your WAR study with MVPs.
So I did two studies. I did once that day when at work. I did another one today at work. I work very hard, Greg, in case you didn't know. Data
That's why
science,
you're on Twitter
whatever.
so much.
Exactly. Hey, it's I'm doing data. I'm a data guy, whatever. It happens. It works. It's fine. So the first one, I kind of split between National League and American League just because I went two different data sets to really see. Just to look, I was going to do both for each of them and see if it compares, but like whatever, I had two data sets ran out of time. Typical Brendan. So at first, I stopped using for this first one. I compared WAR and total votes because I think that that kind of paints a different vic, a bit of a better picture than just WAR in general and position that you finished in. How many votes did you get based on your WAR? So I took WAR is on my I'll post these and your findings to the Twitter page as well. WAR is on the x-axis, the number of votes on the y-axis, and I went through from 2017 through 2021, including 2020, their votes at this point, votes in WAR, whatever. It's the kind of same kind of thing. It's not, but whatever. So what I found is that the R squared value, which is the correlation between those two values, the bigger the number, it doesn't go over one, the more strongly correlated it is. The R squared for these two numbers are a 0.19, so they are not at all correlated together, votes and a WAR. So, but you do look at guys who like in 2020, Freddie Freeman, obviously he finished with a lot lower WAR because less games. But look at, Bryce Harper last year. He did get the most votes. He finished well behind Juan Soto in WAR, but he won the MVP. Christian Yelich in 2018, he finished behind Max Scherzer in WAR, and he won the MVP. Obviously, hitter and pitcher a bit different. Cody Bellinger in 2019 finished believe he got the most WAR. He finished just ahead of Jacob deGrom in a WAR. He got the most votes. 2017, Joey Votto and Giancarlo Stanton got very similar votes. Votto had the go-ahead in WAR, but obviously Stanton had those home runs, which helped. So that was one study. The other one I did today was the American League past 5 years. It was outs above average and first place vote and votes, MVP votes. Because, Greg, I don't think defense matters as much as you think it does when it comes to voting. And it's even less of a correlation than WAR. The R-squared value for this is 0.0018 between outs above average and MVP votes. Do you have a response?
I assume you're using Baseball Reference for?
Yes.
Okay, I figure as much. And I'm not super surprised about that because, yeah, that's why Nicky Lopez didn't get MVP votes last year. I was never trying to make the case it's a defense-first award. I'm just trying to push back against the notion that it's purely an offensive award because I don't think that's the case.
And I think the truth is in the middle. It's an offensively driven award, not saying defense doesn't matter, but according to outs above average, a lot of MVP votes are around zero or just barely above. Shohei Ohtani obviously didn't play much defense. He was at, I put him in as zero WAR or outs above average. Jose Altuve was a negative outs above average. Jose Abreu was just above. Mike Trout in 2019 was negative. Mookie Betts was really the only one that was way above outs above average. He was at 13. Now, I get it's just one metric. If I had more time, I would have compared them all. Defensive run saves and UZR and stuff like that. But outs above average seems to be the industry leading, and it's the most telling, most accurate, or the most whatever it's preferred. That's why I use outs above average, but it doesn't seem like to me much correlation between votes and outs above average numbers.
Which I do agree with that. Like that's why obviously like the glove first guys that don't really hit aren't getting MVP votes, but the bat first guys that don't play defense very well are more likely to get votes. So like I agree, it's an offensively driven award. Like I won't deny that because sure. I mean, like obviously you provide more value to your team if you're a really good hitter than you do if you're a really good defensive player. Like that's just the nature of the sport.
So one last thing before you get into your counter argument, I do want to point out something more about that 2017 MVP, Aaron Judge and Jose Altuve. Aaron Judge actually finished with 10 outs above average that year. Jose Altuve was negative. So that's even more to a point that defense doesn't matter. And I'm going to stick with that. And I'm going to run with it. And there's nothing you can say about it then. And like a lot, I'll send you a picture of this. I think I also tweeted it out, but like a lot of people who are high up in defensive and outs above average were pretty low on the vote count.
Unrelated, do you believe Aaron Judge should have won 2017 MVP?
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think everybody does, really.
Yeah, that's not really. I think it's – I guess you can even say that the storyline for that Astros team kind of helped it a little bit, but a little too big a lot. But yeah.
Aaron Judge's storyline, too, like the historic rookie campaign, like for the Yankees, like replacing A-Rod, I guess, in some sense.
A-Rod didn't play the outfield.
Well, still, no. like the heir apparent, I guess, like the next great Yankee.
Yeah. No, you're right. I don't know. It was Altuve's to lose, and he didn't. Yeah, no, I do think Aaron Judge should have won that.
Right. So in my more detailed part of the study, as I mentioned, I wasn't really satisfied with the kind of the quick and dirty WAR comparison there. So I decided to look deeper. So I compared a number of different stats, and I compared that to the vote points, which I think is a pretty similar metric that you kind of used rather than just like the positioning. I used the actual the vote points that everybody
more granular
that year. So yeah, I can establish maybe some kind of relationship. I went all the way back to 2006 with this again, excluding 2020, because I do not care about shortened seasons. And I need to put out the obvious limitations of what I did here first. So one of them is that I can't capture the whole narrative aspect because we do know that matters. And I mean, I can't quantify that. So I don't know what I can really do with that. Also, I will not have you put my results on Twitter because I produce over 100 graphs for this study. So I do not need you to try to put all of those on Twitter.
Just the ones you want to. It's fine. Just to give the people some visuals.
And then the other obvious limitation here is that I just philosophically believe, in general, that pitchers should not win MVP. I believe it is a position player award. Because pitchers already have Cy Young. They have that prestigious best pitcher award. And There really isn't an equivalent for best position player award except for MVP that carries that level of prestige that shows up in the awards little row or column on Baseball Reference next to your seasons. I think MVP should be a position player award unless a pitcher just has like an otherworldly superlative season and a position player doesn't really kind of stand out as an obvious candidate. I don't think that really happened in the past 15 years, even though we did have two pitchers win MVP in the past 15 years and several other pitchers show up in the top 10. So I neglected any pitcher that finished in the top 10 in MVP voting and just bumped up all the rest of the position
Sure.
players.
Do you think Clayton Kershaw should have won MVP in 2014?
No, I don't, but
He led the majors in a lot of numbers. The majors in a lot of
I
numbers.
will get into that because, like I said, I believe it should
Okay.
be a position player that wins it
That's
just
fine. That's just a
by
question.
default. So
I agree with you. I do as well. But yeah, go ahead.
I took the top 10 position players in MVP voting every year in both leagues going back to 2006, and I compared them all in seven different stats. So compared to their vote points accumulated, I used Fangraphs WAR, Baseball Reference WAR, weighted runs created plus, OPS, on base percentage, home runs, and batting average, just to
Cool.
see if any one stat kind of had any sort of correlation. Now, obviously, I don't think any voter looks at just one stat and is like, yes, that's the one. But I wanted to see if any stat kind of had more of an influence or more of a relationship between how the voters look at the player versus any other ones. So let's start in the dark ages in 2006 when it's just a shit show, dude. Like,
Yeah.
there's no correlation, like, anywhere. Like, the highest ones in 2006 were weighted runs created plus, which is a 0.257 R squared value, so not
Not
much of
much.
anything. And after that was OPS. It's a mess. Like, that year, Justin Morneau won the American League MVP with 3.8 Fangraphs WAR and 4.3 BWAR. I don't know why. I really don't get it. I mean, like, he had a decent batting average, but he didn't win the batting title. Like, he had a pretty good OPS, sure, but there were several guys that were better. And then Ryan Howard also won MVP, completely robbing Ryan or Albert Pujols or Carlos Beltran that year, who both were way better overall. But Ryan Howard got it, I think, because he got like a bunch of runs batted in. I really do think that was the reason, which is
You
very dumb.
didn't, did you? You should have done RBI for all these as well.
No, I didn't do RBI because I think it's very stupid. But yeah,
No,
Ryan
but
Howard should not have won the MVP in 2006, but he did. It
no.
was very silly. Albert Pujols was better. Okay, he was like all of his offensive numbers were better, and they were both first basemen. But they gave it to Ryan Howard. That pisses me off retroactively. Anyway, so 2006 was like
It was
that.
close, at least. It was
2000,
close.
2007 was more of the same. Like, no obvious relationship. Like, A-Rod was very deservedly the American League MVP, so that was fine. And the National League, Jimmy Rollins won it when really David Wright should have. Like, just based on WAR alone, David Wright was way better. And
Yeah.
David Wright had better offensive numbers too. So I don't
And
really know why Jimmy
yeah.
Rollins got it. I really don't.
He played in two more games.
I guess. I don't know what Jimmy Rollins had.
He also had like 100 more at bats.
And
Which is
still was worth two less WAR.
yeah, that was more just like holy shit, but yeah.
And
Yeah, no, you're right.
Albert Pujols put up 8.7 Baseball Reference WAR, which led the National League that year, and he finished
Man.
eighth in the MVP voting. So
Jake Peavy being seventh that year in all
I guess he
MVP.
would have been ninth then, since I eliminated Jake Peavy in pitchers. Anyway,
I forgot he won a Cy Young.
2008 is still the dark ages, and 2008 had like the least correlation of any of them. Brendan, the strongest correlation in 2008 was OPS at 0.0133 R
Not
squared.
great.
It was,
It's not great.
I had no idea what was going on in 2008. Like, I think everybody in 2008 just like throw a dart and was like, okay, that's who I'm going to vote for. Like, was that what happened?
I guess. But hey, Pujols beat Howard this time.
Yeah, Pujols was a very deserving winner in the National League. And I will admit, like, in the American League, there wasn't a super obvious candidate. Like, Dustin Pedroia got it, and I'm not like super upset about that. But I think Grady Sizemore probably should have gotten a lot more rep in there because he was better by every offensive metric except for batting average and was better on defense. So
Who would you have given it to?
Probably Grady Sizemore, dude. Like I just said, like he had superlative offensive metrics and superlative defensive metrics that year. I guess you could make an argument for Kevin Youkilis also. Like I think he would have been really deserving too.
I ain't voting for a guy who's hitting 268 for MVP.
Unbelievable. But like, okay, you want to hear the R squared value for batting average in 2008?
Sure.
0.0578.
Yeah,
Not
not
very
great.
good. Not very good.
Yeah.
Now, in 2009, we start to see a shift. Because in 2009, we start to see voters seemingly looking at overall offensive performance a lot more because we see an R squared for OPS of 0.5759,
That's
which is pretty
something.
good. That's a lot better. And weighted runs created plus 0.5323. So makes more sense. Like Joe Mauer, very deserving MVP winner that year. Like Ben Zobrist was slighted to finish as low in the voting as he did, but
Yeah.
Joe Mauer, very deserving. And Albert Pujols, also very deserving. Like he was the obvious pick in the National League that year. So we start to see more of a shift here in 2009 towards offensive metrics. We see that continue in 2010. OPS and weighted runs created plus are again pretty strong correlation, both around 0.65 R squared value, at least strong for the purposes of this study anyway. That
Sure.
was when Josh Hamilton won in the American League and Joey Votto in the National League, which in the National League, like Joey Votto and Pujols were like neck and neck. So he could have given it to either one of them, really. It would have been fine with me,
Toss up,
whatever.
yeah. You can chalk that one to voter fatigue if you want.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, voter fatigue is real as much as I hate it. 2011, same kind of thing. OPS and weighted runs created plus have the strongest relationship. Now, 2011, Justin Verlander won the American League MVP. I don't think he should have. I think Jacoby Ellsbury should have because 9.5 Fangraphs WAR,
Yankees
8.3 Baseball
legend.
Reference WAR, 150 weighted runs created plus, 32 homers, superlative defense. Like Justin Verlander was really good that year, but that wasn't superlative enough for to give it to a pitcher, in my opinion.
Well, Jacoby Ellsbury also didn't win 24 ball games when he was pitching, so
Unbelievable. Jose Bautista also had an insane year that year, 180 weighted runs created
I
plus.
would have given it to Bautista over Ellsbury and Verlander, but like Verlander didn't pitch nearly as well as Clayton Kershaw did when he won MVP, is the point I want to make. But yeah, no, you're right.
And in the National League that year in 2011, Ryan Braun took it home. Matt Kemp should have took it home.
I think
Because
so
they were
too.
basically the same offensively, but Matt Kemp was better defensively. And
Okay.
I think in that case, we can agree that's a tiebreaker, right? If two players have more or less the same offensive numbers, one of them is very obviously better defensively and more valuable. I mean, that's a fair tiebreaker, isn't it?
I mean, Matt Kemp also stole more bases, but no, you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
I
I
didn't use
think,
stolen bases here because I think we already know that's not like doesn't matter.
yeah, no. Yes, you're right. I think defense would be the tiebreaker. Like, I do think it is worth looking at, but we can agree it's an offensively driven league. You're right. It should be the tiebreaker.
Right now, in 2012 is when we really start to see the shift. The highest correlation in 2012 was Fangraphs WAR with an R squared of 0.65, the highest one that we've seen yet. And that would basically hold serve until the present. Like since 2012, Fangraphs WAR has had the highest correlation of any single stat to MVP votes than any of them. Now, that was the year that Miguel Cabrera won the award when, based on WAR, Mike Trout should have, and I mean, we both know why Miggy won it that year. It was the Triple Crown. Like, that's why. It was a narrative. Because overall, offensively, they were comparable. Like, Mike Trout was actually 1 point better by way of runs created plus and stole a ton of bases and played center field and was like not even close in wins above replacement. Also, Buster Posey, very, very deserving National League winner that year.
Absolutely, yeah. I
And
agree.
that's really what
Chase
we
Headley
see.
finished fifth. Holy shit.
Incredible, right? Padres legend. And that's what we see from 2012 through the present is very consistently Fangraphs WAR had the highest correlation out of any single stat. Baseball Reference WAR was up there too, but generally not quite as high
Sure.
outside of a few seasons. The one real exception to that was 2014 when obviously we mentioned Clayton Kershaw won the National League Award that year and weighted runs created plus had the highest correlation since I eliminated pitchers from the study. 2014, I think probably either Andrew McCutchen or Jonathan Lucroy should have won it.
Or
That's
McCutcheon.
my take. Either one of those two, because like Clayton Kershaw was amazing that year, but I don't think he was amazing enough compared to the position player candidates that he should have been the guy.
No, he was pretty fucking good. Like I mentioned, I get the votes for him, but like to be that, yeah. No, you're right. I to get that 18 first place votes. versus Giancarlo Stanton with 8 and then McCutchen with 4. Like, that's significant. I don't think it should have been that significant.
Yeah, it really shouldn't have. But anyway, basically, since Mike Trout broke into the league, like, Fangraphs WAR has had the strongest correlation of any single stat to MVP voting. Now, what does this mean? I don't think it necessarily means voters are looking at Fangraphs WAR in their MVP votes. I'm sure some of them are. I would say most of them aren't, especially because wins above replacement wasn't really en vogue a decade ago. So I don't think all that many voters were really looking at it at that point. And yet, even so, the correlation remained regardless. I think all this really says is that, hey, Fangraphs WAR is actually a very good expression of a player's value. It does a pretty good job of capturing what they're doing on the field in the eyes of the voters. And I think I can make a decent case now that, yes, there is a very strong connection between a Fangraphs WAR value of a player and how MVP voters will vote, whether they even look at that value or not.
Yeah, but this is getting to too much for me of a stat spot. 0.65 is not strong enough to really make that significant of a...
It's not, but it was a consistently stronger correlation than OPS, than weighted runs created plus, than home runs, which, by the way, home runs consistently was very low.
Right.
Regularly very low. I think that doesn't have much at all. The point is that, like, just the offensive numbers consistently had a considerably lower correlation here than the WAR values did, which I think just points to the fact that voters do care about defense. Like, it's not just an offense first number.
I don't know. 0.65 is enough for me to say that, yes. I mean,
well, as I mentioned, it's not like a one stat thing. Like, nobody looks at just one stat and says, okay, yeah, that's the MVP. I think the point I'm trying to make here isn't even that, like, people necessarily look at Fangraphs WAR. I just think that it's fairly predictive of who's going to win MVP. And it's, like, I've pretty much proven here it's more predictive than OPS or weighted runs created plus or home runs.
But you used defensively adjusted WAR for some of the stuff for Fangraphs when you did this.
All WAR is defense. All WAR bakes in offensive
but
base running numbers. It puts it all in one.
But Fangraphs adjusted their formulas this offseason.
I know.
They're not.
It's like I just said. The point is that the voters didn't necessarily look at the WAR values. The point is it does a good job of expressing how good a player is and is predictive of how MVP voters are going to vote. It's consistently more predictive than OPS, consistently more predictive than weighted runs created plus.
Yes, but my point is that it could be skewed a little bit more because they adjusted their formula, right? That's my point.
That's still not even you're still missing the point. The point is Fangraphs WAR is
not missing
the
point.
A player's value.
I'm not arguing that.
And
I'm just saying,
I don't think the retroactive adjustments really matter for that case.
We went over this and adjusted some WAR values to be good. Yes, but I do think that I want to see what the numbers are this year after we're done. And then we'll get back to it. Yes, WAR is a good predictor. I think Fangraphs WAR is a better predictor because of the way they changed their formula. We talked about this earlier. But 0.65 isn't strong enough for me.
No,
right?
You're right. The correlation coefficient here is not nearly strong enough to make really strong conclusions of it. I guess, like, the only real takeaway I could have is that, like, okay, Fangraphs WAR is kind of predictive, more so than any other single stat. And that if you are going to look at only one stat for some stupid reason for your MVP voting, then that's probably the one that's going to be the most accurate. That's really it. I'm not saying, like, you only should look at Fangraphs WAR. I'm not saying it's anywhere near perfect because it's, like, it's not. It just isn't. Like, there's always going to be flaws with it. The point is just that it is quite predictive pretty consistently, and that kind of does point to me that, like, hey, voters do care about defense. The fact that Fangraphs WAR and even Baseball Reference WAR is still consistently higher than just the offensive numbers, they do care about that whole all-around game, the all-around contributions beyond just what you do at the plate.
I think you're giving the voters too much credit is my point. Like, I think
you're not slandering the MVP voters on the pod, are you?
I am. I think you're giving them too much credit. I don't think you are reading the fact of them that some of them may just say, like, okay, I'm building my ballot. Who are the top 25 players in Fangraphs WAR for MVP? And we'll start my list there. We're using those players. I don't think that voters are necessarily looking to defense as well. And taking that to account, I think it may just be a let's look at war, and then there's certainly what I want from there.
Wait, so you're saying it is a war award?
It's not a war award.
You just said it is.
It's not a war award. Just because the voters use that leaderboard to then shuffle their stuff around as a starting point doesn't make it a war award. But I do think that that 0.65 correlation coefficient more likely points to that. Voters being lazy and just looking at war leaderboards to start their ballots than they care about defense.
What is an award if it's not the metrics that the voters use to vote for it?
Philosophy pod, Greg, I don't fucking know.
Exactly. Bam. Can we agree now that the awards are stupid in general because people are voting for them and we shouldn't use them when we look back at people's careers and our Hall of Fame cases? Because I've been on that hill for a long time.
I have always been more of a results-based guy when it comes to awards. But yeah, no, I mean, like, I get that Fangraphs war may have the strongest correlation. Like I said, not a strong correlation. 0.65 is not strong enough to make any conclusions at all. But I do think it's more so either voters are just looking at Fangraphs awards just to like start their ballot. I think that is a very reasonable cause for this. Whether that makes it a war or not, that's up to you and the listeners. But I do think that you say they care about defense. I don't think they do. I just don't think that, not all of them, but I don't think they care about as much as you think they do.
I would like to just have you justify then why offensive numbers alone consistently had a lower correlation over the last decade. Now, obviously, it's an offense first award. Like we agree on that. That's like I think everybody really agrees on that. Like offense is what wins the MVPs. Defense does not. Hence why Billy Hamilton ever got MVP votes. But regardless, it matters. Like people want MVPs that are well-rounded players that contribute on both sides of the ball.
When it comes to outs above average, like I said, like a lot of the American leaders were around zero or negative in outs above average. Yes, that's
You're
one.
still missing the point. It's not the elite defenders, it's the players that are elite hitters and also play good defense.
Yeah, I mean, you can't be like horrible at one thing. Like I think we're arguing around the same point. Yes, it's an offensively driven league, but like I said, I could cherry pick all of these defensive metrics and get you the same poor R squared. It's war that combines all of them into a cumulative metric, and then that's what gives you the stronger correlation. I don't think it's we
It's a
like
good predictor.
the more. Yes, it's a good predictor, but
Man,
it's not the only one.
that was the only point I was trying to
I'm
make.
not arguing with you. It's not a war award. It's a good predictor, but
Was the only point I was trying to make.
my point is you're giving voters too much credit about them think you think they care about defense. I don't think they do. I think that it only seems like they do because war encompasses defense.
Well, yeah, I don't think you just disproven me there. Also, in 2016, David Ortiz led the majors in OPS and led the American League in home runs. And he had the narrative going. I mean, it was his last season with the Boston Red Sox and a Hall of Fame career. And he finished sixth in MVP voting because he's a designated hitter.
And Mike Trout won with negative outs above average. So, I mean,
And 10.5 baseball reference for.
so it's a bit different, but yeah, I guess I think we're arguing around the same point that, war, especially Fangraphs war, is a good predictor, but it's not a war award.
Well, yeah, that was the exact point I was trying to make, is it's a good predictor. I've never been trying to argue it's a war award, but
I'm not trying to
I think
argue
that's
that's
pretty
not.
predictive.
Yeah, no, I just, like I said, I think that the 0.65, albeit is a stronger correlation than all the other ones, still not a strong correlation. I think
Oh
that can
no,
be summed up.
we can only talk relative here because there was never going to be a strong correlation. I didn't think any single stat really would. The
Well,
fact that like the
you
fact that
didn't do
like a
RBI, so.
0.7, oh my God. If I had done RBI, it might have been like negative.
I don't think that's possible, Greg.
I think
Well,
it's
it is,
very
but.
possible.
A negative correlation. What that would mean the less RBI you get, the
The
more votes
better.
you get. And I don't think
Exactly.
that's the case.
Which there is some selection bias inherent in this because
Sure.
everybody that finishes the top 10 in MVP voting is probably going to have a lot of home runs and probably going to have a really good batting average because good baseball players that win MVP awards are good at everything on the field,
And in
including hitting for
turn,
average and hitting home runs.
probably a high
So,
count of RBI.
and so like the correlations for those offensive metrics may have been a bit dampened by that. I will admit the selection bias
Sure.
inherent there.
Sure. Yeah. My takeaway is that it's just defense doesn't matter, but that's just whatever.
It does. It does
Yeah,
matter.
it does. To a
It's
certain
not,
point, it does.
it's very far from being like the primary driver, but the fact that it's baked into WAR and it's decent coefficient compared to like just straight up offense numbers tell me,
Yeah.
hey, voters do care. Hence
But,
why a first baseman hasn't won MVP since 2010.
well, Jose Abreu won in 2020, but it's fine.
Okay, 2020 doesn't count. It never
It
happened.
does count.
2020 never happened.
I guarantee it counts
I
to him.
blacked out for all of 2020.
Honestly, me too.
I was very, very drunk the entire year.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. I just, again, my whole argument is that you say defense matters, and we can agree that defense is a contributing factor. I just don't think it is as much as you do. And I think that just because, as I said for the 16th time, WAR bakes in everything, including defense, and the correlation is stronger with that because it's an overall better metric than all of these other single ones that only pinpoint one single one. Doesn't mean voters care about defense as much.
All right, you've made my point for me. So, well, this is the last time we will ever have a conversation about the WAR correlation with MVP voting. So, Brandon, do you have anything else for the people before we call it an evening?
No, I don't think so. JP Sears is getting lit up by the White Sox. This is the first time he's given up a lot of runs, 6 and 2 innings. It's not great. Football is back, and I don't have to work that much tomorrow, so I'm great. I think I'm good.
Huge. Do you really have to work that much any day? Does anybody have to work that much any day?
I don't have to, I guess. Have to isn't, but I'm working from home, so I can kind of take a load off a little bit while I work. So it's fine.
Nice. Matthew Stafford is having a not very good game. So,
Sick.
anyway, thank you for tuning in tonight, and I hope you tune in again next week.
See you guys.